Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, January 22nd, 2021. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, it's Casual Friday, folks. Heather Parton, writer at Salon and also proprietor of the blog Hullabaloo, known to some of you as Digby, will be joining us to look back on this pretty consequential week, I would say. And then later in the program, comedian Judy Gold will join us to give us her final words about Donald Trump. Also on the program, Senate showdown over the filibuster heating up. And in a blow to McConnell, Chuck Schumer announces that impeachment articles to hit the Senate on Monday, triggering the Senate trial process. Joe Biden directs feds to tighten worker safety rules, signs an order requiring masks on all public transportation, instructs the Department of Agriculture to recalculate SNAP formula, upping food assistance. Meanwhile, as the House preps passage of a COVID stimulus bill, the Republicans in the Senate balk at any new COVID relief, as well as Joe Biden's proposed immigration reform. Meanwhile, eyeing Proposition 22's spread across the country, Instacart fires all of its unionized workers and then thousands others. Joe Biden gets plaudits from progressives on his FCC pick. However, threatening to do just the opposite on his pick for bank regulation. Democratic House members introduce a constitutional amendment to reverse Citizens United. And Joe Biden's proposal for health care during COVID comes up way, way short of even what he promised. Lastly, U.S. resumes processing thousands of stalled visas for Afghans who aided Americans over the past 20-some-odd years. All this and more on today's program. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It is a casual Friday, but regardless of the day, joining me, Emma Viglin. Emma, how are you?
I'm okay. I'm sorry. It seems like my internet cut out. I thought that was you cutting out, and I tried to jump in and save the day, but technical issues this morning. Other than that, I'm doing well.
We do have a couple of ghosts in the machine that happens that in the era of COVID, we are all in one form or another remote. And so all sorts of challenges. People go through this every day now, though, with their PTA meetings or their parent-teacher conference. Everything is focused on parent-teacher conference for me. I feel like that's all I do. That's right. Like my second job is doing parent-teacher conferences.
Yeah, so everyone can empathize here.
Yes, indeed. It is a new world, a new media world, as it were. Things have really heated up just in the past couple hours in terms of this big square off in the Senate. As you know, the Senate is now split between the number of senators that we have from the Republican and the Democratic Party at 50-50. And because Joe Biden won the presidency, his vice president, Kamala Harris, is the deciding vote in every single vote in the Senate that breaks 50-50, or could. So she is going to be in the Senate probably more than any vice president we've had for 20 some odd years. I think at one point we had a power slip split at the turn of the century, as it were, between Tom Daschle and
First 2 years of Bush, we had a power split.
Right. Trent Lott is right. The name I was searching for. And we will see quite a bit of Kamala Harris, I imagine, too, if the Democrats decide to take the step with filibuster reform. Last night, Lindsey Graham came out and started talking about impeachment on Sean Hannity's show. Now, let's play this clip first.
But they didn't go down that road then. Senator McConnell basically told the Republican conference exactly what you just said. He was offended by the process in the House. It was basically a angry action. It was a taking the process and throwing it over, getting a result, damn the process. That's not going to happen in the United States Senate. I think more and more Republicans, I'll be surprised if we don't have near a unanimous belief that impeaching a president after they leave office is unconstitutional on the Republican side. And I think we'll pick up at least one Democrat, maybe more. So tonight, I want to tell your viewers that people listen to your program, that Senator McConnell's come up with a plan that I think is good for the country, good for the Senate, fair to the president. The president has a very good legal team, a great legal team, and we're going to fight like hell to make sure that the second impeachment of Donald Trump ends as quickly as possible, either dismissed or with an overwhelming vote for acquittal. And
now, what's interesting about this is if you had been paying attention to what Mitch McConnell was saying a week ago or 10 days ago, you would have been under the impression that he felt impeachment was warranted, that he felt that the president was responsible for inciting an insurrection that took place on January 6th. And I think what happened was he watched what happened to the Republicans in the House. They got slammed. And then he recalculated as to where the Republican Party would be. Do you remember, and this is rhetorical, but I guess I'm asking you anyways, Emma, we heard the private musings in the New York Times of Mitch McConnell saying he thought this was good for the Republican Party. It was going to allow the Republican Party to move on and distance itself from Donald Trump. And then when he sees what happens to those 10, 11 Republicans in the House that voted for impeachment, he realizes, oops, no, I got to do the opposite. And so the whole plan was now to kick the can. He asked Chuck Schumer, can we do this in February, late February? Because the idea was like as far away as you can get from the armed insurrection and the arrests that are happening almost on a daily basis. And the reports, there was a report yesterday that the guy with the zip tie handcuffs also had a sniper rifle in his house. I think Mitch McConnell thinks that's better. And however, about an hour ago this morning, on the Senate floor, here's Chuck Schumer basically telling, Mitch McConnell, Christmas is coming late for you this year.
I've spoken to Speaker Pelosi, who informed me that the articles will be delivered to the Senate on Monday. Now, I've heard some of my Republican colleagues argue that this trial would be unconstitutional because Donald Trump is no longer in office, an argument that has been roundly repudiated, debunked by hundreds of constitutional scholars, left, right, and center, and defies basic common sense. It makes no sense whatsoever that a president or any official could commit a heinous crime against our country and then be permitted to resign so as to avoid accountability and a vote to disbar them from future office. Makes no sense.
He's right.
Yeah. And I love how Lindsey Graham talked about McConnell's strategy, which right now is to filibuster, no pun intended. He's saying that he wants to give Trump's lawyers more time to prepare, which really is just like, there's a lot of heat around this right now. We want the temperature to go down in the public when talking about this attempted insurrection and Trump inciting it. And so maybe if we waste some time, things will cool down and we won't actually have to hold Trump accountable and it won't be tied to the Republican brand as a whole. Luckily, Chuck Schumer seems to be dismissing that out of hand. And so there's a bit of a contradiction in what Lindsey Graham said there, right?
Trump's
Trump's legal team is so, so well put together. But also McConnell is saying that they're not prepared enough. And that's why we have to kick the can down the road.
They're going to push the legal team because, as they say, when the facts are not on your side, you try and argue the law. All right. We got to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Heather Parton, or as you may know, her, Digby. Hey, folks, this episode is brought to you by Quip. And Quip, I mean, I have a little bit of a dilemma here. So Quip has introduced a new type of a new gum, and it comes in a dispenser that's refillable. I mean, this is one of the things that I love about Quip is that all of their products are geared towards creating less waste. And the gum is sugarless. It has it is really designed basically for when you're on the go and you can't brush your teeth. You chew the gum, and dentists will tell you sugar-free gum is a great way to basically clean your teeth when you don't have access to a brush. Now, I've been using a Quip, I don't know, for a couple of years at least now. I love it. But here's my dilemma. So they sent me and I mentioned this the other day, I have been using I got super obsessed with like dental hygiene about 2 or 3 years ago. And I started flossing, but I could only use flossers because my fingers too fat. I just can't fit them. I can't do it back there.
Well, yeah. And if I have a built-in retainer on my bottom teeth, so I need the flossers. I can't even use regular floss. I have to thread it through. Yeah.
Yes. So. Flossers are great.
Amazing to me.
But yeah. It's hard to find a good flosser. And I've had to use like kids' flossers for whatever reason, because they're smaller, but they're tougher. I don't know. They invented something that I have been like, I have been praying for it, but I've been like contemplating for a long time. Like, how would you have a flosser that is refillable? They invented one. I don't know if they invented it, but they sent me one, and it's amazing. It's amazing. It is everything you want. It's small. It's compact. I shift around a lot because of my kids, so I have it with me all times, and it is a great flosser. But it doesn't create all the pounds of plastic waste. It is a one-time thing. You string it through. They executed it flawlessly. I love this thing, and I can't wait to get the gum. Apparently, it's got xylitol. If you chew it within 20 minutes after eating, it helps prevent your cavities. I'm psyched to let my kids chew this gum, and I like the fact that it's refillable. But I'm telling you, go check out the gum. But believe me, check out those flossers. And, of course, the toothbrush. You pair Quip gum with their electric toothbrushes, their refillable floss, and more great products. And as you know, Quip delivers fresh brush heads. They deliver fresh floss and toothpaste refills every 3 months from $5, starting at $5. Shipping is free, so you can save money. You can skip the store, and you can also cut down a little bit on how much garbage you put out into the world. If you go to getquip.com/majority right now, you get a free plastic dispenser with any refill plan. That's the plastic dispenser for the gum. That's the beauty of it. Refillable. I can't believe people haven't developed that already. That's a free dispenser at getquip.com/majority. GETQUIP.com/majority. Quip, the Good Habits Company. And lastly, this program is also sponsored today by Sunset Lake. We've talked about Sunset Lake all through 2020. Their CBD products are the best. Any of us have tried it. Matt on the more smokable end, me on just the tincture end. We're both CBD skeptics because of bad experiences in the past. They sent us some sample products, and Matt has made the smokables a regular part of his, well, I don't know, imagine, oh gosh, what happens at the Matt Leckian
household. Well, I can tell you, I add the CBD smalls to my grinder when I want, everything I'm grinding to stretch a little bit further, and it's a nice little additive to it. So I would check out the smalls if you like smoking, folks.
I've tried the pre-rolls. They're great, but for me, it's the tincture and the salve and the coffee that are my favorites. Of course, they've got the gummy bears. But
those are my favorites.
The other thing about this company, which locked it up when we talked to them about advertising on the show, in addition to being fans and longtime burners, they're up in Burlington, and their business practices are great, $15 minimum wage, et cetera, et cetera. They're farming practices, regenerative farming practices. They work with the University of Vermont. They're great. But they're really, they genuinely care about their community. Apparently, throughout Vermont, and in particular rural areas such as Aalborg, there's not enough childcare providers to meet the needs of working families. Folks know that childcare, early childcare for kids, I mean, fortunately in New York now we have universal pre-K, but childcare makes all the difference in terms of how kids show up at school and how and where they start in terms of their early child development. High-quality early learning environments have far better educational outcomes. So Sunset Lake CBD is donating 10% of their online sales to the Aalborg Family Clubhouse from January 20th to January 31st. That's right now, which is going to provide much-needed affordable childcare in their community. This is on top of the $2,500 the team already donated in December. This is not a big company, folks. So this is, it's impressive they're doing this. So they're asking MR listeners, they're hoping we'll push this project forward, and they're grateful for your support. That means you, the listeners. Head over to sunsetlakecbd.com. Remember, coupon code LEFT is best. Gets you 20% off all their products. Now's the time to do it over the next 10 days. sunsetlakecbd.com. Okay, want to welcome to the program one of our favorites, writers. She's been one of my favorite writers for 15, 16 years, maybe. Heather Pardon or Digby, welcome to the show. Do we have her?
She should be joining here in a second. I'll play her theme song while she...
All right, we'll do the Heather Pardon theme song. there she is. All right, thank you for the music. Heather, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us, and congratulations on surviving the Trump era.
It wasn't easy, as you well know, but yes, we're here. We live to tell the tale.
So, obviously, it would be a good time to look back on the Trump era, but let's not do that. Let's look forward to the Joe Biden presidency, and almost more to the point is what's happening in the Senate right now. And there's a fascinating dynamic that's developing. Just an hour ago, Chuck Schumer announced that impeachments hearings are going to, well, I should say that the trial, I don't know exactly when the exact trial will take place, but we know that as the articles of impeachment show up at the Senate on Monday, as he announced this morning, that means that the process starts to kick in. That means it's imminent, and we're going to see it, I would imagine, the first hearings within a week or so, at least. And I'm curious as to what you think is going on. Mitch McConnell wanted to punt the trial after, you know, privately saying he thought this was a good idea for Republicans. And Chuck Schumer seems to have, I don't know, called his bluff.
It looks that way. It's funny because you and I had I think we actually talked about this, about Mitch's little trial balloon there. You know, I'm deeply offended by what happened. And, you know, he just a couple of days ago, he was saying he provoked the riot. I mean, he used the word provoke. And I don't think either one of us ever really believed that this was a sincere position on Mitch's part. It was a trial balloon put out there to see how much resistance there was going to be to actually, you know, putting Donald Trump out to pasture. I don't doubt that that's what McConnell wants to do. That Donald Trump is a pain in the neck. He's not somebody that's really, on a personal level, somebody that Mitch McConnell wants to deal with. But they do want the energy and excitement and devotion of his followers, obviously. So they don't want to alienate them. So obviously it's exactly what you say. He saw what was happening to those House members, including Liz Cheney, who is royalty in the Republican Party and a member of the leadership in the House. And she made a bet that the smart move, I mean, I don't doubt that Liz Cheney's, you know, alleged, you know, personal integrity was not the issue. It was about her positioning herself for a presidential run, and which is what all of these people were doing, Holly, Cruz, Liz Cheney in the House. She did that because she was making a bet that Donald Trump was going to be, somehow degraded by the time 2024 came along, and she would be able to fit into this mode of, you know, I was the one who stood up to him. I'm the strong one. And of course, she's an incredible, national security hawk. And her entire, you know, like her father, her entire shtick is going to be that, you know, he destroyed our reputation in the world, which he did, but not for the reasons she will cite, and that we need to rebuild our, you know, our aggressive national security policy around the world. And she needed to be strong, right? So this was, I'm going to stand up to Donald Trump. Well, in Wyoming, where she's from, they actually, the Republican Party there, issued a censure motion against her. And they are coming down hard on her. Whether that lasts, I don't know. I mean, I've been surprised more people didn't make the bet that Cheney made. Because just following in lockstep like a bunch of, you know, brain-dead lemmings as the Republican Party has been, it seems to me, isn't there some room to take the other side of that bet that somehow Trump is going to, you know, lose his potency over time and that maybe you'd be in a good position? But she seems to be pretty much the only one. Ben Sasse is the one in the Senate, of course, who's done the same thing, taken that same bet. So anyway, sorry to digress, but I think that McConnell sees what's happening, as you say, and realize that his best bet now is to just try and finesse this thing as much as possible, stick with Trump, you know, don't make it into any big fight. I think you get that sense from the Lindsey Graham argument on Hannity last night that you also mentioned. What he was saying was sort of, you know, look, this is the process argument. We don't want to talk about what actually happened there. This is, you don't impeach a president after they're gone. And look, he's gone now. So now we're just whipping him for no good reason. And they just want to finesse it. I frankly was really pretty shocked to hear just this morning that Pelosi had said she's delivering it on Monday and Schumer said we're going. I mean, for whatever reasons they have, which maybe you can explain to me what their thoughts are beyond just that it's recent in people's minds. So you want to, you know,
I think it is. The fact that it's sort of baffling to us as to why Pelosi and Schumer would have done the exact right thing that they should do in this instance is sort of telling, but they're doing it because the offending event happened 2 weeks ago. And the impeachment was more recent. They understand that the further out you get, the more it feels like a process argument. Why are we impeaching this guy? He's been gone for a month. Why, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And they're doing exactly what they should do.
Can't underestimate the human element of it, too. And the fact that they were the ones that were hiding and they were the ones that thought their lives were under threat. I mean, that is definitely a factor here, even with Liz Cheney's calculations as well.
I think that can't be overlooked as well. I think that's absolutely true. And that they're And maybe that is what's driving their political calculation as well. But I think it's quite obvious. You need to do it as close to the offending event so it's still in people's minds. And what is, I think also we need to take from this, I mean, you alluded to it, is that if anybody had a question as to whose party this is, the Republican Party, it is clearly still Donald Trump's party. And, you know, Mitch McConnell, here's a little tip for folks. When you read something about what Mitch McConnell is thinking privately in the New York Times, as opposed to a right-wing site, understand that he is putting a test balloon out there essentially for David Brooks or for that type of Republican to see if there's anybody going to rally around him. And I think what he found out was what, you know, we had talked about on the program yesterday. 75% of Republicans think that Donald Trump got more votes than Joe Biden in the election. I mean, according to some of the research that they've shown. Now, maybe the numbers are a little bit lower, but I mean, I don't know how off this research can be. The Republican Party is Donald Trump. Donald Trump is the Republican Party. Any illusions aside from that, whether, you know, they have dispositions that are different or their voters have decided who they are. And that's and that's the way they're going. But it plays into this notion, Digby, as we sort of pivot from the impeachment to the question of the filibuster, because this is, in some respects, the whole kit and caboodle when it comes to Joe Biden's presidency, it seems to me. I mean, there have been some very good, we're on day three now, really the second full day. And there's been some good, executive orders, and some decent appointments, you know, the FCC appointment. I mean, these are relevant. The firing of the general counsel of the National Labor Relations Board, that's going to have a material impact on the power of unions. And particularly like on a day when Instacart just fired the people who voted for a union in their ranks. But the Senate is where this is going to happen. And give me your sense of like where we're at here in terms of the filibuster, or I guess we could start with COVID relief, which seems to be dead on arrival, immigration, which seems to be dead on arrival, the sense of unity that Joe Biden was asking for 2 days ago doesn't seem like it's happening.
Well, what's happened is that the Republicans have done what you and I predicted, what anybody who's been watching them for years would predict, which is they were going to take unity and bash, you know, Joe Biden over the head with it by saying, we're not unified. You're not doing what we want you to do. You're being mean to us. So there's not going to be any unity. Look at you, you failure. I mean, they did the same thing with Barack Obama. So the unity thing was always, I mean, it's aspirational. It's Joe Biden's, you know, it's his mantra. It is his brand in many ways, you know, empathy and unity and I feel your pain kind of thing. And I didn't, you know, blame him for that, but I never for a moment thought that there was a chance that it would actually work. And there were people who thought, well, he's got friends in the Senate and yeah, whatever. We're talking about Mitch McConnell and Ted Cruz. That's the Senate now. And Tommy Tuberville. That's who we're dealing with in the Republican Senate. That's, you know, so Joe Biden never had a chance in that if he ever thought he did. And it appears that he basically is sending out an invitation. If you want to do bipartisanship, let's come up to the White House. We'll have lunch. We'll chat. We'll remember old times, whatever. But because he's done these executive orders and he did, you know, they're important. They're big. I mean, Keystone Pipeline, you know, stop DACA. I mean, these are serious issues and they're very much oriented to the left. And they were basically saying to the Republicans, please, I'd love for you to join me rather than I'm looking for ways to join you if I can. So that's a big deal. As for the filibuster, you know, it's pretty clear to me that they've drawn the line there and that McConnell, I mean, what he did was unprecedented this week. This thing where he said, I'm going to filibuster the organizing agreement and essentially saying that we're going to keep the committees in the hands of Republicans, basically, because you can't seat the Democrats that have just been elected, making it a 50-50 Senate and shifting the majority in the committees. That was a shot across the bow, a nuclear shot across the bow, saying we're not going to cooperate in any way. I mean, this is as basic as it gets. It's pro forma. There's nothing about it that has ever been partisan before, particularly after they made an agreement. So he's saying this, you know, he's saying, look, I'm going to fight for the filibuster. I'm going to fight for it with everything I have. And here I am coming out just loaded for bear. And that's the way it's going to be. So I hope that the Democrats, you know, get that, and that they are prepared to do the same. This is where I worry, because what you know, you can't fight an asymmetric war with the same old tools. And that's essentially what this is. You've got a minority party that is determined to rule by minority. And in fact, they're developing more and more skill at doing that. They do it through, I mean, they've been doing it through the Trump years in various ways. You could, you know, they get elected in this way. They take advantage of the Senate. I mean, the Senate right now, 50-50, the Democrats won 41 million more votes to get that 50-50. I mean, that's not democracy, at least as I understood, at least not in any kind of comprehensible way. That this is ridiculous. So they're showing that they are willing to do whatever they need to do to maintain minority rule. And, you know, they know they've got to get through the next 2 years. And the only way they can do that, I think, Mitch McConnell, this is what he specializes in, is going to obstruct at every step of the way. And the Democrats have to realize that they just cannot afford to let that happen.
Now, our friend David Dayen had, you know, was tweeting about this, and he has an alternate theory. And I think it's starting to make a little bit of sense that maybe Mitch McConnell, by taking this maximalist obstructing position so early on, right? I mean, he's not playing the game of like, of course, we want to work with Joe Biden and et cetera, et cetera. And I think he realizes that he could get jammed up here because, look, people need we have the highest number of new unemployment claims again this week, higher than we've had since they started taking records in 1967, higher than during the Great Recession. And to the extent that there was any type of recovery in the fall or anything like that, that has all gone away. And it's undeniable. I mean, it's undeniable. And I think people also realize that that Biden needs this this help too in terms of like fighting COVID. And it appears that maybe what Mitch McConnell is doing right now is basically saying, all right, fine, like challenging, really challenging Chuck Schumer to do the filibuster now, because once Chuck Schumer triggers the filibuster or eliminates it, in some way, it lets a lot of Republicans off the hook in terms of making tough votes. And he has half a dozen members of his Republican caucus who are up for reelection. Maybe I think one or two are resigning in places like, you know, Ron Johnson is arguably in trouble in Wisconsin. Marco Rubio, arguably. There are others. You got Pat Toomey in Pennsylvania who's, you know, going to retire perhaps, it looks like. And so McConnell may just say, like, you know what, you see what you can do. Joe Manchin's going to have to take all the tough votes.
Yeah.
Kristen Sinema is going to have to take the tough votes. Mark Kelly's going to have to take the John Hickenlooper. Make them take the tough votes, and so that we can get the Senate back in 2 years. And you're not going to do anything terribly significant, as far as we're concerned, really, anyways, with a one person majority in the form of the vice president. That could very well be his calculation.
That is super smart and could very well be, because that does let his people off the hook. They're no longer responsible for the outcome, basically, of anything. They can go whichever way. And maybe Mitch learned his lesson, because, you know, he had people like Cory Gardner in the last election. He had people like Martha McSally. They were dancing on the head of a pin, trying to deal in those purple states, and it didn't work out for them. So maybe he's trying to sort of help some of these people, like you mentioned. Now, when is Manchin up for re-election? Is it 2022? Because I honestly don't know.
I think he's actually 2024.
2024, the Swearingen primary was the 2018 year.
Right.
It was the same cycle as Ocasio-Cortez when she first came in.
Okay, so it was the big blue wave cycle, right, that you made it through. Well, that's interesting, because from the ones that you just named, the centrist caucus in the Democratic Senate, none of them are up in 2022. At least I can't think of who that would be. So, you know, they will have to take the tough votes for sure, but I don't really think Mitch is even caring about that, because what he's caring about are his own people who are now in trouble, which is a defensive posture for McConnell. That's a little bit unusual that he's thinking in terms of how to let his senators have room to grow, because he's done everything in the past. His strategy has been to have the Republicans be a monolith in the Senate, to absolutely, you know, they just did not make a move without worrying. Now, you know, some of that had to do with Donald Trump, and that may be a factor going forward for all these people, too, because I think they're all looking at primaries from the right if they don't, you know, toe right. the Donald Trump line, which is going to be difficult for them in blue states or purple states or whatever. So that's very interesting. And you know, of course, and I think you're absolutely right, and Dayan's right too. You know, Mitch is all about, you know, strategizing for power in the Senate. That's the only thing he really cares about. Absolutely. I don't think there's, and he doesn't have a policy agenda. It just doesn't exist. He is purely a creature of power maintenance, of, you know, in finding a way to do that. And he barely lost it this time. I mean, it was very, you know, it was kind of a miracle, to be honest, that you know, we won those two races in Georgia and did that, you know, that actually worked out for us. Thank, you know, heavens for Stacey Abrams and the rest of those grassroots people down in Georgia, and Donald Trump too, who I think, you know, made a hash of that particular situation as well. But that's what McConnell is doing. And it's going to be very interesting to see how that works, because we're going to see suddenly, and you've pointed out in the past, you know, Joe Manchin's going to have a lot of power in the Democratic Party without the filibuster. He's going to be the fulcrum around which all of this legislation, and Joe Manchin or any of the others in that position, they are the veto point now. And that's going to be very interesting to see what they do.
It's interesting because, you know, my thinking has been up until this point that why wouldn't Joe Manchin want to be the fulcrum? But, you know, from just my back when I was in high school and playing baseball, there's two types of people who, you know, are playing out in the field. Maybe this is more like junior high at that point, where there's some people who are like, please don't hit the ball to me. And some people are like, please hit the ball to me. And Joe Manchin could be one of those guys who are like, please don't hit the ball to me. You know, like he could be somebody who is like perfectly feels that he's most comfortable not being the guy. Mm-hmm. And without the filibuster, he really becomes the guy. And like I say, you know, Kristen Sinema could also become the guy, and Mark Kelly could become the guy, and Hickenlooper can become the guy. It may come down to the four of them, and maybe I don't know, one or two others saying like, do we agree that we're all the guys?
Right.
And so that like none of us stick out, so that like we, you know, we vote as a block. Either the four or five of us always vote with the Democrats, or we don't. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's very hard to know what the calculations are with this. But I would say as of today, my sense is, and if you had asked me this a week ago, I would have said no way. But my sense is that we could see the filibuster reform within a week or two. And here's the other thing from Mitch McConnell's perspective. It occurs to me, McConnell already knows that he can't block judges, right? Because there's no filibuster for any of the judges now, whether it's federal or Supreme Court. So he doesn't care about, you know, that's out the window. He can't really stop confirmees except for with this tactic he's doing right now, which is basically like holding the Senate hostage and saying, we're not going to do anything, more or less. And so he's thinking about that legislation, and he's got to probably weigh in his mind, like, how dramatic can things get with Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema and Mark Kelly and John Hickenlooper as the guys. I mean, there's others too, I would imagine, that he might perceive as being roadblocks to any type of real legislative, you know, going big. it remains to be seen if those people can be brought along, particularly during COVID. But it's the downside for him versus the potential upside of protecting his people and picking up a Senate seat, one Senate seat. That's all he needs to pick up. In 2022. I mean, if I was Mitch McConnell, I might take that too. Even if I cared about ideology, which, like you say, I'm not sure how much he does. I just want to drop this in because this is interesting, and it sort of dovetails with, like, you know, getting a sense of where the Democrats are. There's definitely, this is such a, it feels so different to me than 2008. I don't want to overstate where I think we're going to go here, but dispositionally, it feels different. Jeff Stein from the Washington Post reporting senior Democrats are drafting a plan to send to directly send $3,000 per child and $3,600 per young child to millions of Americans. Aides say this is an effort to look more like direct checks, aiming for a direct monthly deposit of $300 than the traditional tax credit offsetting liability, which, of course, doesn't have value to you if you're not making enough to offset that liability. Plan still has to be written and passed. Aides say planning subject to change. Some Democrats are worried about IRS capacity to actually pull this off. Leading Democratic plan would not require families to offset credit against liability to receive it monthly. And some experts at Columbia say the bill could reduce child poverty by about 50%. Now, just the fact that we're seeing, and again, I don't want to overstate, like, you know, Joe Biden's come out with his healthcare plan, and it's basically taken from the HEROES Act, minus the expansion of the public option, as far as I can tell, which is just subsidizing COBRA, which is incredibly wasteful. It's just a total sop to the healthcare industry. It's horrible. But there's other things that we're seeing, like they're green shoots. I don't think they're going to grow so big. But give me your sense of just like where we are today. And we sort of predicted this too. But, you know, when we've seen these fights about personnel, on balance, you know, progressives have gotten some of the things that they wanted, not all, but some. They're not getting, let's put it this way, it's hard to sort of say that Joe Biden is specifically smashing progressives in this, you know, as to where we are at this point.
Right. There's no sister soldiering going on either, where, you know, he's smashing progressives to prove to the, you know, the political press and to others that, oh, look, I'm not one of them. You don't have to worry about me, which was a, you know, a dynamic that went on for decades in Democratic politics. And
including with the Obama administration.
Yeah,
I mean,
oh, they did it famously. Too. And in fact, they came in and very, very specifically, you know, defanged the, you know, their entire grassroots organization that they had built up. I mean, this was, yeah, and it was a conscious thing. They did it on purpose to show, to prove to the political establishment, including big business and Wall Street and certainly the media and the old school political establishment in D.C., that they were not in the grip of the progressives. I don't see that dynamic happening here. What I see more is a kind of like, this is a big faction in my coalition that I've got to account for. And so it seems to me that people within the Biden, you know, inner circle, whoever it is, maybe it's Ron Klain, maybe, you know, there are a lot of good people actually around him who are, you know, kind of saying, look, these are good ideas. Let's do it without regard to the fact that they are, of course, going to be slammed hard by Republicans. I mean, this is the new thing that I haven't seen before, which is kind of, I think after Donald Trump, it may be that Democrats have just gone, you know, these people are nuts, and worrying too much about what Republicans think of us may not be necessary. We don't, you know, these people, they're going to do their thing, and they already are. They're calling, you know, this is Marco Rubio out there, and he's running for, now he's one who's running for re-election in Florida. You can bet he's being let loose to be as Trumpy as possible down there, and he may be running against Ivanka Trump, which should make for a very interesting race down there. But anyway, he has gone as far right as he can get. And he's out there complaining that Joe Biden is a socialist because of these things that you mentioned. So this is where they are. I mean, that's Marco Rubio, right? I mean, he was the fair-haired boy who was going to be the next president. They had groomed him as a, you know, as the young Latino.
The new generation. Yeah, he was part of the immigration reform in 2013. And I mean, there was.
Yeah, well, now he's signaling that he's not going to support that immigration reform now. So, I mean, on the flip side of what you're saying, and I agree that there are some positive signs about the Democrats, this effort to get the COVID relief bill through in a bipartisan fashion right now by Biden is growing in increasing my frustration with, like, some of the tactics that still remain on his side. Like, this is not going to get 60 votes, no matter what he wants. And so I don't understand why the approach of trying to get it through reconciliation isn't the first approach taken, because Republicans are literally speaking to the press saying, we are not going to pass this. We are not going over the $900 billion mark. And that's obviously woefully insufficient. So there are positive signs, but I have fears that, like, are we really going to wait until March to get this COVID relief bill out there? I mean, it took 6 months with these negotiations for the last one that, you know, ultimately was immensely watered down.
Well, I hear you. And I, you know, you could have, you know, seen maybe them coming out and just saying, look, we have to move so fast on this that we're not even going to, you know, pretend that there's going to be a bipartisan negotiation here, because it's clear that we can't get 60 votes. We already know that. But I did notice that Bernie Sanders, who's the new chairman or of the budget committee, that I think maybe they've adopted his approach, which was very, it was kind of a dismissive thing, saying, yeah, okay, I'm all for trying to get a bipartisan, you know, understanding here. You know, let's try and do that. But we're not going to wait very long. That's not going to happen. And he made it pretty clear that they were planning the reconciliation approach, that was how they were. Now, you know, McConnell has put a bit of a, you know, thrown some sand into the gears with this organizing thing. I mean, God help us, if that lasts very long, we have bigger problems. But the if that happens, I don't know, Sam, tell me, can they go through reconciliation without going through a committee on this COVID bill? Can they just take it to the floor?
I, you know, that's a good question. I mean, the reconciliation process is not something that can happen too quickly. You need to actually set up you need to actually pass resolutions to set up a reconciliation bill. It is a multi-stage, very sort of Byzantine process. I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know if you could actually do reconciliation. I mean, that's what I think is more likely to happen, frankly, than doing a quick reconciliation, is that within the next week or two, Chuck Schumer just says, like, we're voting on filibuster reform, and that is it. You know, we don't need a committee. We could just do that in regular order, and we set up the rules.
Checks and shots approach that Dan talked about with us yesterday, it seems to be gaining steam. I mean, I saw Eric Levitz of New York Magazine just came out in favor of it, and I could see them going that route too.
The most fascinating thing, because I think, you know, Digby, you were talking about the sort of the Democrats have a different sort of attitude, and they're not worried about Republicans. I think their worry about what Republicans say is really essentially filtered through what they perceive the Beltway media to say. And I think to a certain extent, the boldness, in quotations, we're seeing from the Democrats is also a function of the fact that the media is still in that mentality. You could see them trying to sort of break out of it, like Joe Biden has a Peloton, thing. But
he snapped at a reporter.
David Brooks came out today in favor of the filibuster. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
in favor of filibuster reform?
Yes. And I, you know, the last thing in the world that I thought that I would do at any time in the remaining days I have in my life, and I would start this clock 20 years ago, would be to cite David Brooks positively on anything, really. But with David Brooks, who, if there's anybody who's talking to suburban Republicans, at least in the mind of Democrats, it's David Brooks. And the idea that David Brooks is coming out and saying, you know, do this, like, I just think we're seeing it with the impeachment. There is a sense of like, maybe we should seize the moment on some level. And it feels like that. Now, there's a lot of things that are pushing here on that. Chuck Schumer is reportedly, and I think, you know, very concerned about a primary from his left. He has been massaging, you know, progressive groups for a year. And he has been nervous about it for more than that, I think, since the day that AOC won, beat Joe Crowley. And I think that is definitely influencing his behavior. And it seems like now is the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I can't remember, some Twitter wag said this or someone that, you know, sort of saying that, you know, the Democrats and maybe all politicians to some extent are always, you know, fighting the last war. And for decades, we had Democrats fighting this idea that Ronald Reagan won because the, you know, the spending was out of control and we had the misery index and they couldn't let deficits run wild and whatever. And that was sort of what governed everything that they did, particularly in any kind of economics. And it's true that I watched it all happen. So I know that that was exactly where they were coming from, this absolute terror that they were, you know, going to spur inflation and they were going to be held responsible, you know, all of that stuff with the deficit hawkery. Interestingly, now it seems as though they are finally fighting a different war. It is the last war, but it's a good thing they're fighting it.
Right.
Because the war that Obama came in and didn't go big enough, and that they wasted their opportunities and the recovery was too slow, and they ended up hamstringing themselves by not being bold enough in 2009 when they came in. And by the way, it was a $900 million, you know, ceiling that time as well. And I'm sure you remember that number has some magic, you know, kind of quality to Susan Collins. And this, you know, and the Democrats seem disinclined to listen to that. The other side of it, as you put it, you know, the press is hugely important here. And I noticed this morning that Maggie Haberman retweeted a tweet from one of the reporters at the New York Times, citing Jack Schaefer of Politico, saying that the press needs to be very careful and not be too easy on Joe Biden because most of the country mistrusts the mainstream press. So you're going to see that happening. And I think there's going to be a lot of pushback. And I think that reporters are much more sensitive to that than they used to be because, you know, it's social media. I think they've also been personally burned by the Republicans and Donald Trump to such a degree that maybe they, you know, developed a little thicker skin to that particular criticism. But it's going to be out there.
Yep.
And it's already being seen, you know, oh, look, you know, Joe Biden snapped at a reporter, oh, look, this, that, and the other. And it's just going to, it's going to take a lot of forbearance on the part of the Democrats to resist that, you know, it's this kind of gravitational pull to, you know, both sides, everything, and to try and say, look, you know, we're just as hard on Democrats as we are on Republicans, despite the fact that Donald Trump was, you know, frankly, a monster. And so, you know, we're going to see more of that, I'm sorry to say.
Someone on Twitter, and forgive me, I cannot remember who it was, made the point that you can, if the press is determined to cover Joe Biden's, let's say, lies in the same way that they did Donald Trump, they're necessarily going to give each lie like 20 to 30 or 40 times more attention because Donald Trump was constantly lying. And so if Donald Trump delivers 100 lies in a week, there's only so much time to cover each one of them. But if Joe Biden delivers one lie in a week, they're going to spend the whole week on that one lie. I mean, on some level, that dynamic is,
I mean, Trump,
you know,
flooded the market. Like, you couldn't cling on to anything.
It's exactly.
Just, there's way too many. What do you grasp at?
Exactly. You know, so it's interesting that you bring up
emails, right? That's what happened with Hillary Clinton was yep. They updated her, you know, two scandals to the level of Donald Trump's overwhelming incompetence, ineptitude, you know, and psychopathy and you know, his pathological narcissism, her emails became, you know, the equivalent of that. And that,
it's the power of a narrative. It's the power of creating a narrative.
For sure.
You mentioned Ronald Reagan, and there's a great piece by Timothy Noah in, I think it's the New Republic. I don't have it here, but he pointed out the point that Reagan's number, you know, Reagan increased the deficit, his spending went up. I've said many times in this program, if you look at the recoveries of every recession, the big tell that we did not see during the Obama administration is the growth of government jobs is what really pulls us a lot of, or is a key element in pulling us out of a recession. But, and you and I have talked a little bit about this in the past, Digby. I think one of the other factors, and again, I think it's possible, I don't want people to get the wrong impression. I'm not overstating. I don't mean to gloss over, you know, what I think are inevitably going to be Joe Biden's shortcomings. But we're 2 days in. And just from a dispositional standpoint, and to the extent that they've done anything, you know, what you can do within the first 2 days. I didn't have huge hopes for Joe Biden, but to the extent that I had minimal hopes, many of them have been, you know, basically landed. And I think part of this is also in terms of response, there's a lot of different factors in terms of comparing this to the Obama administration. But the idea that Noah talks about is that that we're entering the era where it's the end of the war on government. And people like Bill Clinton carried this water where they said, you know, the era of big government is over. I mean, Democrats had adopted this. Mm-hmm. And there is the one thing you got to say about a pandemic is that it is quite clear to everybody, and certainly the people who are in Joe Biden's administration, it's going to take government to fix this. We just watched, you know, we're having shortages of vaccination because of the failure of the Trump administration to use the power of the federal government. And now we have an administration. Joe Biden is not being advised by bankers how to get out of this crisis. He's being advised by public health officials. Mm-hmm. And inherently, their perspective on what you need to do is completely keyed into the concept of public, that we are all related, that we need a massive, a communal response to something that impacts all of us equally. And
That's a really great point.
Because he's not surrounded by bankers who are going like, well, you don't want to have a moral hazard. You know, like if you give people a vaccine too early, they're going to go and assume that they can go. No, it doesn't work that way. and so that is
no controversy of whether or not to jail the creators of coronavirus. Right.
Yeah, like, I mean, this is the perfect example. This is, you know, this is Independence Day when the aliens come in, right? It's like, you know, we're not going to create a moral hazard, but if we protect people from the aliens, you know, they're just going to allow aliens come in. No, this is, and so I think that could be one of the factors that is going to, and we're going to know, I feel like we're going to know the answer to these questions within like 3 or 4 weeks.
I think you're right. And I mean, that is just such a great point. I mean, if anything, you know, sort of illustrates for us the necessity of government, the necessity of collective action in the face of you know, a common threat, the need for us all to kind of, you know, give a damn about each other and, you know, not be the whole libertarian, you know, worldview that, you know, it was just radical individualism. I mean, all of that stuff has been challenged. And one other thing has been challenged, and it was challenged for me. I mean, I'm a believer in government, of course. I'm a good liberal. I'm all for funding everything that can help people, you know, no matter what. But I had not realized just how important leadership was to that. I had kind of assumed that, you know, something like the CDC, for instance, that it sort of operated like a machine. And I don't mean to say that it's a deep state thing, that it's a, you know, but I did think there was an infrastructure in place in our federal government and in state governments as well, that just sort of chugged along. And you could have a Ronald Reagan one period, and then you'd have a Bill Clinton, or you have an Obama or whatever. But basically those things still operated on a certain sort of, you know, regular kind of scale. It turns out that's not really true. I mean, all of those things have, number one, been degraded through all of this from, you know, going all the way back to Ronald Reagan, I think, when, you know, this whole thing really started, the devolution of government, the dismantling of the administrative state, as Steve Bannon used to say. And you know, this kind of thing just, I mean, it's just been terribly degraded. And to the extent that what we have is left, you know, the politics really matter. And it is, you know, if anybody thought that that Donald Trump wouldn't be a huge impediment to doing anything right, they were wrong. I mean, it did make a difference. It made a huge difference. So, you know, maybe that's part of our new era as well.
Heather Parton, Digby, folks can check out your writing at Salon.com and, of course, every day at the Uber blog Hullabaloo. Thank you so much. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, Digby.
Thanks, Emma.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back to land this baby in just a moment. Well, we're back. Let's we're waiting for a little bit of music. It didn't show up. That's okay. We're having technical difficulties. So, Emma, these things can go either way, but the next 3 or 4 weeks, I think, are going to be really telling. It's going to be telling as to whether we see something on the filibuster front, and whether we see something on the front of Joe Biden, you know, basically coming out and saying, like, it's pretty clear we don't have a partner to negotiate here with.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And look, for many years of being disappointed by Democratic Party and them they're flexing their non-existent muscle, I guess, has scarred me. But I do think you're right that there is growing rumblings that there could be filibuster reform, and that is the key. That there's a reason McConnell is so scared of that prospect, and Democrats should use that to their advantage.
And let me make this also clear, is that when you have filibuster reform, if we get it, it's not just, I don't think people should just expect that we're going to see the Democrats do things that we think they should. But what will become very, very clear is that when they don't, people are going to know specifically who's not and why. One of the key things about filibuster reform is that it's going to make our Senate more Democratic. And I mean that by, you know, not the Democratic Party, but more Democratic.
And the senators more accountable democracy for their votes, which is part of why
exactly
I think
right.
They're scared. Yeah,
exactly right. All right. We got to say goodbye. We'll be back on Monday. Remember, if you missed any part of this show, you can see it on the Peacock app, the Choice Channel, 5 p.m., 10 p.m. daily. Check it out. And for those of you who are sticking around, Judy Gold will be joining us any moment. Well, we're not going to go into the fun. In fact, yes, here she is. Brendan, we didn't hear that music during that break. And here is Judy Gold. She looks like the book, Yes, I Can Say That, which is her new book. Judy, are you there? Is she coming on?
I'm here.
Hey, Judy.
Judy Gold.
Wait,
so hold on for a second. We need some music. Can we play some music? We need to play Judy Gold's theme song.
We just had trouble with the break music. We may not be able to. Oh.
Headed,
fuck you!
Calm, cool, and collected.
I have a bigger penis than him.
Judy Gold is on the line to keep us all connected.
What the fuck is the matter with him?
A steady hand to guide us. She'll keep us calm and carry on.
No fucking way!
Too bad Jimmy Reefer Cuck didn't find her worthy of a song. Well, Judy Gold.
And he's such a fucking penis head liar. I'm not kidding. That's the president of the United States.
The only thing I could think of is, like, at one point we're going to bring you on, and I just can't help but think maybe there's a chance it's just going to apply to our next president too on some level.
Not right now, Sam. No. Not right now.
Judy, you must be... You've met Emma, right? You know
yes,
Emma.
Yes, I love Emma.
Love you too, Judy.
You must be ecstatic right now.
It's funny. I have a myriad, that's my hair, of feelings. But like, you know, the rage. You know, they say that rage is buried sadness. And I realized that I cried so much on Wednesday that I was very sad about what was happening to our country. Like there was, and that the only way I know how to deal with that is by screaming and yelling, because that's how I grew up. But I was really sad. That insurrection sent me over the edge. And
wait, what?
Yeah, you what know what I'm you, saying.
Well, I mean,
yeah.
Come on, like let's be honest. I mean, you've been over the edge. I feel like
over the edge. Okay, Sam. At least I'm in touch with my anger. And still, you know, like sometimes I still get on there to look at like, you know, what's his name, Junior and Kaylee, and I'm like, oh, I hate you. Like my. I don't even think anymore when I write, but when I tweet back, it's just like, shut up. Am I allowed to curse on this?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I'm like, shut up, you fuck face. Fuck you, you fucking liar. Like get away, go, bye. But, you know, there were 74 fucking million people.
Judy, how did you feel at the inauguration? Because, you know, Sam and I were talking about it. I had a bit of an empty feeling. I kind of wish Trump had his Twitter account for like 12 more hours so we could melt down.
I agree. There was a bit of like, can you just do a split screen of what they're doing right now so I can see what the hell's going on?
Did you see those pictures of the Trump kids crying, like Ivanka?
God. Fuck them. Like Ivanka has a feeling, you know, someone put like Visine at the end of her eye. I hate them. I hate them so much. They are so disgusting. Bye now. Bye bye. The thing though, when Biden's family came in and it was just like normal people, it was normal people. Like Doug Emhoff is like a normal nerdy Jewish guy. You're like, it was just, they're normal. I mean, you don't have to believe in everything that they say and do right now. Can we just have a honeymoon period, please? I can't take anymore.
You want? Oh, you want?
I can grant you that honeymoon period.
Yeah, I mean, this is like the thing.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Just for a couple of days.
No, that's all I got to say.
Whatever.
Well, this is my big lament is that liberals. Once the bad man's out of the office, we went through this with Reagan and George Herbert Walker Bush. We went through this with G.W. Bush, bad man out of office, then go to sleep. But you know what? Mitch McConnell's still there.
I know that fuck face.
The Republicans are still there. The Democrats, you know, they have a job to do. We got to stay engaged. Yeah, brunch. There's no time for brunch.
You know, the one thing that fat orange fucking piece of fucking dirt and scum did was it made people more engaged in civics, in understanding like, wait, he did what? He's not allowed to do that. I mean, people really, they know what the 14th Amendment is. They know what the second, the 19th, people know more about the government because he was such a fucking dumb piece of shit. So I feel like that was a positive thing. Like even my kids are really engaged in this, but that fucking McConnell, like, did you see, like, during the inauguration, they kept putting the camera on his face and they put the camera on Pence's face. I don't want to look at fucking Pence, but you're right. They're still there. Ted Cruz is still fucking. Did you see Ted Cruz's mask?
No,
I did not. What did it say?
It said you're not going to take this away from me. And it was a weapon. He's such a fucking asshole. He's bad as shit. He's a fucking disgust. He's so ugly. and I hate him. He's my new fucking, I hate him so much.
The worst part about his like stupid gun is that it's performative. Like that guy's
right.
Princeton educated little weasel. He doesn't really want to go in a shooting range in his spare time. That's just his game.
Wait, what about these See You Next Tuesdays who were like that one that wants to bring Lauren, has to bring her gun on the house floor? What is that?
Lauren Boebert. Yeah, I don't know what the status of the investigation, but there's been, you know, some pretty serious accusations that she was basically giving people a tour around.
Yeah.
And she's got it coming. Now, listen.
And they had a map. She made a map. Yeah, she had a little map like you get on a hike when you go on a hike and they're like, this, you know, this is this. So she had the little map. But here's what I don't understand. I can't get a fucking bottle of water through the TSA. Okay. I have a water bottle with half filled and they're like, you got to blow it out. You can't get on your flight. And these fuckers can get in the Capitol building with weapons and they're taking shits. They were defecating in these offices. How do you defecate on cue? Seriously, what were they like? You know, we're going to get in at 1:30. I'm going to have a bran muffin at 11:15 and a black coffee. All right.
I mean, them to do it in front of an audience, like that's got to be some sort of sign of sociopathy, right?
Oh, my God. And, you know, they're the same people who are like, don't want to share a bathroom with a trans person, but they'll take a shit on Nancy Pelosi's desk in front of everyone.
I feel like Gigi Allen did that once or twice too back in the day, but I'm not 100% sure about that. But yes, it certainly, I think it's a weird thing to do. Like, hey, I got to go to the bathroom, so can we speed up this insurrection so we can get inside?
Yeah, I got to get in. I'm holding it in. It's coming out, guys. We got to get in.
Now, listen, Judy, I knew. I hope you're not mad about this.
What?
I knew how much you wanted to get a sense of what Donald Trump was doing in Mar-a-Lago. Now, I imagine Melania is like, I would be shocked if she wasn't in a different wing of the
golf club.
And they're just saying like, remember 30 days or whatever it is,
right,
and then you can go free. I knew that you were interested maybe in just getting a sense of how Donald Trump is taking it. And so we got a call. Apparently we were the only ones who would accept it. But
wow, are you kidding?
Is he here?
Hello, Brandon. How are you doing this morning? It's so great to be speaking to you.
I'm not Brandon. I'm Sam.
Sam, you do such a wonderful job with liberal and with all of it. I think you do a really wonderful, wonderful thing. And I just want to compliment the Mondrian in the background. I think it's a beautiful. He was one
okay.
Of the
it's players. Definitely not him because he would not know what the fuck, but who Mondrian was. So we're done. Definitely an impersonator.
You know what? The Mondrian is one of Disney Plus's best, I think, one of the better Star Wars. I mean, not a lot of people like Rise of Skywalker. But they love Mondrian. They thought he was really good. They love it. They love when they do a big cowboy on the Star Wars. I just love to watch it.
Wow. So, Donald, can I ask Donald questions?
Please.
Listen, you fucking fat piece of shit. What's going on? Like, did Melania leave?
Excuse me. Melania is fine. Everybody always asks the same thing. You know, what does Melania do? Is Melania happy?
I hate her, too. She's a bitch. You know, both of you are fucking assholes.
I'm not a huge fan either, but listen, life goes on, okay? It is time to unite and to come together.
Oh, shut up.
We need to, okay, listen, you had your day. You had your day to scream. You got your guy now. I don't know what you're so upset about. You got your guy. He's a socialist. He's a loser. He's a big, fat idiot, too. I mean, you've got your own.
Yeah, he's really a socialist. He really is. Listen, fuckhead. What's with Barron? I didn't see Barron at the fake goodbye shit that you pulled.
Everybody asks about Barron. You know, where's Barron? This is a boy with his own life, okay? He's got... do you have teenagers? Have you ever tried to get...
Yeah, I have one teenager, one 24. Yeah, uh-huh.
I told him, excuse me, Marilyn, I'm president. You know, we're going away now. We're moving out. And he says, two more minutes for Minecraft. Two more minutes. Just let me keep iPad. And I said, no, we've got to stop. It's time to get out of the grocery cart.
Are those the only words you spoke to him in the last 4 years?
I speak to him all the time, but he's got, it's called AirPods. And the kids love them. And he's always losing them. And I'm screaming into the ear with the AirPod. And he says he can't hear me. I go to the other ear. He says, well, I can't hear out of that either. Because you know what? These kids don't want to listen. And neither do Democrats. Neither do Democrats. They don't want to listen. They don't want to work together for a shared goal. It is all about
that's so true.
And
that's so
5 minutes on Minecraft and doing iPad and all of this.
Right.
So they're babies. I think they're being babies right now, frankly. And now they've got King Baby. They've got Boss Baby.
Yeah.
They've got their little
Listen, what's going on with Rudy?
Rudy is, you know what, Rudy? What we're going to have to see. We're talking to Rudy very strongly. And we're going to have to see.
What's with your sinuses? What the fuck is going on? We're talking to Rudy. What is going on? Like, honestly, what do you do? Do you do the Adderall? What the fuck is going on there?
Okay, so it was called 1980s, okay? And nobody from 1980s has clear sinuses. I don't know. Maybe it was something in the air. There was a mysterious ash that infected us all and made us very peppy. And I just don't have access to those, whatever you call it. I don't know what they call it. You know,
it's called tissues, asshole. So what's going on? So you and Rudy are, he is such a fucking disaster. I mean, you're a disaster and you're a dumb fuck, but he is beyond like the shit coming out of his face and then sticking his hand down his pants. Like
okay,
he's,
excuse me.
Yeah.
Okay. Excuse me. Listen, everybody says that. Nobody likes me. Okay. Nobody likes me. Nobody likes Rudy. But we have more support than anyone's ever had, frankly, anyone's ever had for a presidency, for a lawyer. So, and everybody hates us. I mean, I've never seen so much lack of support for two people that we've ever seen in our lives. But we have such an incredible base of people who support us and love us. It's really unlike any president you've ever seen.
What do you think the IQ of your average supporter would be, the IQ?
You know what, with Q, a lot of people like Q and they were listening and they're really upset now. They don't have they feel like they don't have the leaders anymore. And it's really a shame because this is somebody who would wear the big Flintstones hat and he'd say, follow me. Where we go one, we go together and we do it all the time.
So
now they don't have Q.
All right, shut the fuck up. Listen, who do you hate more, Donald Jr. or Eric?
Eric. You know, with Don Jr., this is someone who is there for you. He's ready to work.
Right.
And he's a complete idiot. He's a total piece of shit. But when the chips are down, he is ready to get dirty and, you know, take
what
it
about,
where the sun doesn't shine.
What about
Eric,
Tiffany?
Count on Eric. You just can't count on Eric.
He's a fucking
off
idiot.
In the clouds.
Listen.
He's off in the clouds.
Tiffany is marrying someone from a shithole country. How do you feel about that?
Tiffany, Tiffany, what are you talking about?
Oh, okay.
We're here to talk about issues. We're here to talk about real things. I'm not here to weigh in on the new Saved by the Bell or whatever the hell you're trying to push.
Right.
Because listen, I got Peacock and I wasn't a fan. You know what? There's too many subscription options. What happened to one option?
Right.
Okay. I want a $9.99 or I want to bundle with, I don't know, Hulu, Spotify, I don't know what else, whatever the hell you want to bundle it with. But I got on the Peacock and I said, I want to watch Office. Okay. And they said, well, do you want to watch it in Spanish? It's $2.99. You want to watch it, you know what, backwards? What the hell? That's $30 for some reason. So it's awful. I don't like Peacock and I don't like YouTube. I don't, whatever the hell you
Okay. So listen, I really need to, I have another question, fuckhead. Listen. Like you're off Twitter. Like, what are you doing
Respect the office, okay? First of all, we have to come together and respect office, okay?
Yeah, because you did such a good job of that. Yeah,
we need to respect the office because Michael Scott might be the funniest character that we've had on TV, probably since probably since Marty Fife.
Marty Fife. Okay, listen. What are you doing? Like, there's no Twitter. What's your outlet? What are you doing now with all your dumb, stupid, nasty shit?
Well,
thoughts?
You know what? I like to queue up a couple autoplays of Bon Appetit and see what's in the pantry. Mm-hmm. And we just start throwing things together. Well, we were also talking about maybe arranging for a cross-country trip with Guy Fieri to, you know what, see some of the, because there's a lot of restaurants that you can't always go to Chili's. Sometimes it's nice to drive mom and pop. So I thought I might go with Guy. You know what, maybe we're going to do a Guy. We're going to check out different restaurants or something like that. Because there's lots of places in this great nation that people maybe don't know so much about.
How much do you weigh?
You know what? That's not really something that we need to be, because in many ways I weigh a lot, but in other ways I'm one of the skinniest people that you've ever seen. So we feel very strongly when we're stepping on scale that it's a very good number, probably a better number than you've ever seen. I mean,
like 666?
Really incredible numbers.
Yeah.
You know what? Everybody always says this is devil, this is bad. I think the other guys were much worse in terms of Republican. I think I did a pretty good job of just kind of not doing the job.
I'm going to say that is true. That is the truest statement ever.
Excuse me, Karen.
Oh, I'm so sorry. You know what? You're not president. And I can fucking interrupt you, ass.
Karen, do you want a guy in charge who's good at the job and disagrees with you? I don't think that you do. I don't think that you do.
Listen, Donnie, you know, Melania put in the fucking tennis court. How many times did you play tennis? Because I know you're very athletic.
I love to play tennis, and I love to do sport, and I love to do soccer, okay?
Soccer?
I like to do boxing. Sometimes I will punch straight through a wall because I heard that an obscure New York socialite said something pissy about me. I will just punch straight through a wall. Billy Blinks, you know what? I love to work out. I love to exercise. And I love to be active. Okay. I'm probably one of the healthiest presidents you've ever seen. Frankly, of all of the current presidents, I would have to say I am the healthiest.
Yeah.
Right? Oh. Youngest, most beautiful.
Did you get the vaccine?
You know what? I don't think I need to do vaccine because I've already done disease. When you have the vaccine, that's for someone who doesn't have the disease because they want the disease. Do you know what a vaccine is, by the way? Little disease. It's Latin for little disease. So we didn't have to get the vaccine because we already did disease pretty big. I don't know if you saw, but we did a very good job with getting coronavirus. And it became disease really bad because you know there's a difference, right? There's corona. And then there's the virus, and then there's the disease.
Mm-hmm.
So it's separate things. With the injection, you're just getting the disease. You're not getting coronavirus. I think it's much better to get virus and let it see where it goes, okay? You don't get married on the first date. You see where it goes.
Right.
You see where it goes.
I have one final question.
Let Brandon talk. I mean, this guy wants to talk. I mean, am I talking?
No, he doesn't want
to
talk. He wants me to
Karen this
listen. You can talk to Sam. It's not Brandon. It's Sam. Listen, I want to know. I mean, you got three Supreme Court justices on confirmed. My final question is, how many abortions have you paid for in your life? Go ahead.
You know what? There's a time and a place for questions like that. And this is, by the way, okay, so you're feminist, right? So you know what we're talking about. We're feminist and we're women and hands off and all of it. So that is for a woman to know and talk about and her own story to share. And it's her own money to spend. That's ultimately what it comes down to. Okay, bottom line, this is a woman's problem. I don't think men should be talking about it, paying for it, whatever. You know what? This is for women to deal with. So in terms of have I paid for it? What did I pay for? Did I do it? I paid for everything else. Why should the woman have to pay for the dinner? So why should the man have to pay for abortion? These are traditional American values, traditional values.
Right. Well, I hate you. I hate
Judy,
you.
Judy, I have to say that it has been my fantasy to have the opportunity to for you to talk to Donald Trump. After he lost. And so
yeah.
I feel
you're a
like,
loser. Loser, Donald. You know loser. You fucking lost. Everyone hates you, fat fuck.
Excuse me. Excuse me. And yes, we lost, but in many ways, we won probably bigger than anyone's ever won.
No, you didn't. You didn't. You're orange. You fucking ugly. You're fake. Your hair is fake. You're disgusting looking. You're disgusting.
You know, when you say that, when you say that, you are disenfranchising so many people, 70 million people. Okay. That's a lot of people. You're going to have to get along. Okay. Either we're going to get along or we're going to start shooting each other's heads off.
I don't have a gun, fuckhead.
Well, you should can I just step in here?
Yeah, sorry. I'm sorry, Sam. I should have ended on the abortion question. Yeah.
Judy, I know you got to jump, but this was...
I can't tell you how much I love this, Sam.
I knew it would be cathartic for you.
I mean, I'd like to do it again. I mean, if you can bring on, like, I'd love to have Ted Cruz on or Josh Hawley. But Donald, listen, I hope you continue to lose at golf. Everyone at all your neighbors around Mar-a-Lago hate your fucking guts. You ruined this country. You suck. And I hate your kids. So have a great weekend.
There's no pleasing these people, Brandon. There's just no pleasing these people.
No, I understand. Well, Judy, thank you so much.
Oh, my God. Thank you, guys. Great weekend.
All right.
Me too.
There you go. I knew that would be incredibly cathartic for her.
She needs to chill out. She needs to get, you know, nice TV or something and just chill. Would it kill her to just, I don't know, watch one of those shows where they walk in a house and they say, I don't like the paint, you know, and they go with the other house or whatever that is, you know, whatever you calm down to.
You watch a lot of that TV? It's House Hunters, I think you're talking about.
I like it. It was a beautiful movie. How the young woman, she walked in, she said, I don't like the paint. The real estate agent says, well, maybe you could change the paint. She says, no, let's go to a different house. Let's go to a different house and look
not
at
a
the
movie.
Different house.
It was not
a
movie.
I'm screaming at the movie. You can just paint over the paint, young woman. You can just paint over the paint.
That was not, that's a TV show. It's not a movie. That's why it was only 30 minutes long.
Well, you know what? I'm a very busy man, Brandon. Don't have time to watch every piece of every movie.
You've confused me the producer. Let me say goodbye to the president. I want to bring on our next guest. His name is James Austin Johnson. You may have caught some of his work on, I guess it's on YouTube or on Twitter.
Mostly Twitter and Instagram. It's mostly Twitter and Instagram. Yeah.
James, it's such a pleasure to have you here. I cannot thank you enough for allowing us to have that moment of therapy for Judy Gold. She has been.
That was incredible. I haven't laughed that hard in like.
Honestly, I think we just added like 3 years to her life with the stress relief that you provided. So, dude, it's a real pleasure to have you here. I don't know. I guess people stumble onto the fact they can do. Did you know you could do Donald Trump impression before he became president?
You know what? No, I probably started in 2015 or 2016, and I think I had the same reaction that everyone did immediately as comedians started doing Donald Trump, which is like, that's the most hack impression you could ever do. Why would I work on a Christopher Walken or a Michael McDonald? You know, why would I do Donald Trump? It's hack. But in general, just like as a comedian, I've always done impressions probably longer than I've done stand-up, but I wanted to be taken seriously as a stand-up, so I just never really pushed it on the impressions thing. And it's just hearing that voice every day for hours, for years, I couldn't help but attempt it. You know what? And if Sam Elliott was president, it would be Sam Elliott right now.
I mean, the touch of excuse me is like the thing that gets me, because that is just such a specific part of father speech.
Yeah, you're so right. I mean, nothing pisses him off more than like a strong woman trying to like bulldoze him. And he does this calm down thing that I don't know what it is, but his tactics for controlling anybody and dominating anybody are kind of the exact same. But it seems like, especially with any time a great journalist who's a woman like attacks him, he does this like, hey, mamacita, mamacita, please. Hey, okay, listen, excuse me, excuse me. I love that little. I like when he goes down. I normally keep it at rally Trump, a pretty, you know, high wavelengths, lots of screaming. But when he gets calm and Luther Vandross and sexy, I mean, that's fun too. I love those tones too.
Oh yeah, it's sexy as hell.
Super sexy guy.
Yeah,
just oozes.
Lots of oozing. Yeah.
So James, where are you from?
I'm from Nashville, Tennessee, and Oklahoma City, and I'm now based in Los Angeles. I've been in Los Angeles since about 2011, but my wife and I go back and forth from Nashville to Tennessee pretty frequently, from Nashville to Los Angeles pretty frequently. So it's been an interesting time to have a foot in both a Republican stronghold and a, you know, hippie granola crunchy socialist prison, as Tennesseans think of Los Angeles. And I'm like, you should come hang out in Orange County. You'd like it a lot.
do you feel oppressed when you're out there and then free when you get back to Nashville?
Quite the opposite. What I like about Los Angeles is the freedom to be a freak. Like, if I want to walk down a street in Los Angeles and record myself as Donald Trump screaming about, like, Taika Waititi, I can. And there's always somebody freakier and weirder doing something much louder and stranger nearby to distract anybody normal who would think that's weird. But we were just in Tennessee for a couple months with our families, the stares that I get for doing anything out of the norm is so, in these places that are like very libertarian and Republican and individualistic, you absolutely must conform to a normal way of living and dressing. They talk a really big game about individualism, but if you do something cool and fun and unique, man, that is hated and quashed by the social infrastructure as quickly as possible.
Did you do stand-up? Were you doing stand-up in Tennessee? Like, over the, I'm obviously not in the past, I hope not so much. You've been laying off it for the past couple of months, but prior to COVID, were you doing stand-up there? Do you get political at all? Were you doing your
in the before times, I definitely was doing, I would go back to like clubs in the South and stuff every once in a while. And, you can't just do hip alt rooms, and coffee shops and stuff. You have to do every kind of venue, or you're not, you know, doing your duty. But, I would go back. I would do Trump stuff. I try to be as pretty goofy and just general comedy as possible in my act. But the last like few years, especially growing up super Christian, super conservative, I had to start confronting some of these, you know, these sort of these movements and these things in our times. And so I broach those subjects and some stuff really works. It's fun to see something that connects with a crowd that you weren't with a Baptist crowd that you weren't expecting to connect with. And then some of the stuff really, really does not, but you just got to plunge ahead. I mean,
wait, is it the case that you started on like the Christian comedy circuit?
Yeah, well, it's not so much a circuit as just whatever stage is available and whatever mic is hot. But yeah, I was a teen Christian stand-up comedian from like 14 to 18. I probably performed maybe 15 or 20 times total.
But what does that mean? So you would do, I don't know, I guess like
churches, block parties, Christian colleges. I did a riverboat one time.
Was your comedy? Yeah. Was your comedy at that time? I mean, I don't know. Maybe it still is. Are you telling Christian-y specific jokes, or is it just like you were clean? Like, it wasn't like you were going to like a plumber's convention. You were like, hey, can you believe the new soldering stuff they have these days?
No, it's definitely in that clean zone. I mean, those are a lot of the comics that I grew up on were like conservative-ish, Christian-ish branded comedians. But
like
my first love is this guy, and it's so strange because he's really changed as a lot of the guys of that generation have changed over the course of the last 20 years or so. I was really into Brad Stein. That was probably the first comedian I was really into. He's got albums like Wussification, A Conservative Unleashed, Rebel Without a Curse. I was asked this question all the time. I heard the men around me asking the same question all the time as I was growing up. Why aren't there more Christian comedians? Oh, I heard Jeff Foxworthy converted to Christianity. That's cool. Hopefully he cleans up his act. At some point, I heard that comment morph into, why aren't there more conservative comedians? So even in Christian settings, they are not caring so much about getting Christian values affirmed as they are conservative values.
Is that what you meant when you said that they've changed, that these like, yes, sort of like 100%. People who were playing to Christian audiences
kept politics out of it.
James, do you know Pete Holmes? Are you familiar with Pete Holmes' stuff? I watched that show Crashing a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, Pete Holmes is that's an interesting guy. Definitely when I was sort of getting out of church world, his podcast talked a lot about those themes about like extracting yourself from conservative spaces like that. And that was very, very helpful at the time.
I need to introduce Sam. I just want to say real quick, I need to introduce Sam to Brad Stein, actually, because I think, Sam, you'll get a kick out of this guy. Because it is a lot of just right-wing comedy.
He used to just be a club comic, and then now it's all like the pussification of America and like all of these themes that are just like made up, the war on Christmas, stuff that exists only virtually in the minds of people for many years. I only heard this in hushed tones at dinner conversations. Social media is where all of this codified and turned into like, an actual movement of people. It's very strange. Like even Brad Stein performs a lot at these Promise Keepers conventions. If you're familiar, this is hotter in the 90s, but Promise Keepers is kind of a big group of dads who get together and promise not to masturbate. And he would perform at these men's empowerment conventions. And even that masculinity movement has really shifted to see how all of that has incorporated bodybuilding and QAnon and like conspiracy theories and, you know, all of those like fringe things are coming together when they used to seriously just be these conventions of guys getting together and being like, your wedding ring means a promise. It means that you love your wife. Like they were just affirming general normative good stuff. And now it's this like anti-gay sort of like militant thing. I really do not recognize a lot of the Christian subcultures that I came up in. It feels really weird. I do a lot of material about how it feels really weird to interact in those Jesus spaces these days. A lot of people feel alienated from them. And everyone of my generation that came up in that world is like, can I still go to church? I don't agree with any of these people anymore, like on anything.
That's fascinating. I mean, I think like my sense is that the comedy world, just broadly speaking, has become more political. And I guess I've been more conscious of it, you know, in terms of like the left, where comedians are actively engaged in politics. It was not the case 15, 16 years ago, you know, when Janine and I started to do Air America, like our comedian friends who were all, you know, the lefties were still like, what are you doing? Why would you do this? And, you know, the idea of doing comedy and mixing politics, it's like, you can't, you need to service the comedy only as opposed to any of the politics. And it hadn't occurred to me that that was happening on the right, particularly with Christian comedy. I mean, to be honest with you, I was not up on Christian comedy when it was, I guess, in its heyday.
How dare you?
But
how dare you not be familiar with
that's
a
fascinating
fringe channel deep in the Sirius XM bank?
I have a lot of you like in terms of like people who grew up in that like evangelical. Were you evangelical?
See, stuff like born again and evangelical, we never used any words like that. I wouldn't even know if we were. When I think of the word evangelical, I think of Baptists. I grew up in what's called the Church of the Nazarene, which is very different from Baptists. There are so many theological things to parse and separate yourself from other churches when you're in Christianity and deep with it. And so, you know what, I never, let me put it this way. I never felt like I belonged to the world of the like overly made up and Botoxed people hawking magic water on TBN. That never felt like our world ever. You know what I mean? Like we weren't super involved with, you know, running up and down the aisles. Actually, the church that I grew up in was very anti, you know, tongues and doing cartwheels and stuff. So you can, once you get into it, you know what I mean? It's like rock and roll. Emo is very different from alt country. Basically they're the same thing, you know, four instruments and a drum set or whatever, but it gets very, very different when you're actually in that world. It's the best way I can sum it up.
But your family were Republican and conservative. I mean, so that was sort of the,
But you didn't talk about it. It was like a thing you assumed. It was a private thing that you did every 4 years. You didn't talk about it. You know, like the analogy about sex, it wasn't a thing that anyone acknowledged. Has been very interesting to see the lines be drawn in the sand. And definitely Trump was kind of one of the first times we really started talking about it as a family. At least the kinds of different people in the family describing what kind of Republican they were, what kind of voter they were.
What happened with your family in terms of like this era?
A couple people became very like, I'm just going to say it. I'm voting for Trump and I'm into it. And then, I would say 80% of the other people were like, let's do that and not talk about it. And then me and like three other cool cats were like, nope, bad. We're the left wing people in the family. Bad, bad, bad. There were some blow ups, between me and family members, but a lot of that I'm going to actually say is on me. I mean, I was filled with left-wing anger when I saw Trump, especially coming from that Christian world, seeing someone so uncharitable, unscrupulous, somebody who didn't represent a single Christian value sort of taking over my church. It ultimately underlined the fact that it wasn't my church anymore. Like it just ended up reaffirming my decisions to leave and leave it to them. So it was a good thing. I mean, overall, I think it will turn out to have been a good thing. Nobody likes to throw up, but your body wants to vomit for a reason. I think this was a 4 years of vomiting. And, you know, it seems like we have ejected a considerable amount of poison. It also just highlighted a bunch of other stuff that's not going to go away. I think that was very valuable too. And eventually I made peace with those family members. I told them early on, I was like, you're going to regret this decision. You're going to regret this guy. He's going to blow it for you. And I think his presidency speaks for itself in that respect. And it also kind of taught me not to take leaders that seriously in general. Life's too short. And we have to be kind to each other on our own. I mean, that is something that we have to do as a society. I don't know. It's good now. I think it's good now. Everybody's good now. I don't know. I don't know. It was uncomfortable there for a minute. I, you know what? What's interesting is they hated the Trump voice the first few years. They thought it was very disrespectful and it made everyone really queasy. By the end of the presidency, they were asking me to do, like this past Christmas, they were asking me to do Trump anytime we were all together. The same funny people that were the most vocally supportive of him. To me, I would sum that up as ultimately lost a ton of respect for him over the course of his decisions and behaviors and policies. That's what I thought would happen. And I'm glad that I could do my disrespectful voice and speak truth to power in whatever minuscule way it is. I don't care about changing anybody's minds about Trump. I only care about releasing the valve. What you were kind of talking about, like what's the duty of a comedian? Should we talk about politics or should we not? Ultimately, we just got to be true to ourselves, right? And if we're more political than we were a few years ago and we're being authentic, comedy should come out of that. If we're being inauthentic, being preachy, didactic, pedantic, the comedy starts to be obscured by, I think, by that, by putting on a front. But if we're speaking from the heart and being ourselves, that should connect with audiences. I think that's what I found with Trump, was being authentic. I thought he was ridiculous. But when I just started playing him as ridiculous instead of someone I hated, it became really fun for me and for audiences, I think.
Well put. Well, James, what are you up to? The comedians I know right now, I mean, same a lot with the musicians and whatnot, that it's a very tough time. Obviously they can't work, at least in the same way. I mean, you've figured out a way of getting out there, and now Donald Trump has taken that away from you in some respect. Although, I certainly would have you come on the show and do Donald Trump probably for the next 10 to 15 years. I mean, based upon how long I hung on to Senator Catherine Harris, who was Secretary of State in the 2001 Florida election. But what are you doing? What can people, if people want to check out more of your stuff, what would they do?
Right. Well, I think there's going to be a hunger for hearing Trump scream about Sonic the Hedgehog for many years to come. I think he will always be in our hearts and a source of aggravation that needs to be massaged. If you want to watch the other comedy that I do, I have been a comedian for a lot longer than Trump has been president, and I do other comedy. Please find me at Shrimp, J-A-J, Shrimp, like my favorite protein, Shrimp, J-A-J, Shrimp Jadge on Twitter and Instagram. That's where I do a lot
Shrimp
of it.
Shrimp Jadge, right.
Shrimp Jadge. And you know what? The comedians right now, we're just preparing for that big Joe boom that he barely deserves. I mean, we're going to worship that guy once everything explodes and opens up and Hollywood starts spending money on performers like me again. I'm going to be so happy. And whoever's in charge during that is going to get a big garland parade. We're going to lift him up high on a chair. That's what I am looking forward to, is whatever sort of cultural pep is reintroduced as things even out and we can, you know, enjoy going to the grocery. I used to like going to the grocery store. I'm really looking forward to that.
James Austin Johnson, thanks so much, Dan. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank
you, Brandon. You're a wonderful person, and Judy and all of them, you know, at Chelsea and Richard. Wonderful, wonderful people.
I have no idea.
Great American. America right. Report. Listen to America Report every Thursday at 9 p.m. Or you can just change it or whatever you want to do.
All right. Well, yeah. All right. Yeah. Thank you. All right, we'll see you later. In other words, like, yeah, there we go. Well, among everything else that I found fascinating about talking to him, both enjoying him arguing with Judy, but it really occurred to me that how much it might mean for the concept of Joe Biden's presidency if July, August, September, things start returning to some semblance of normal by this time next year. Maybe things are, you know, more or less completely normal. I think that James has a very good point. I think the American public could just like look around and go like, who's president while this happens?
Right.
And, the key is, getting us to that point. And making sure that there's some measure of potential left. But it's going to be interesting.
And expediting that process. I mean,
yes,
for God's sake, that's what I want.
Right. Here's can I show you just Brad Stein, Sam?
Yeah, we might as well just do a Freebie Friday today, right?
Yeah,
I think so.
Forget it.
So
let's see this Brad Stein guy. Who's
all right,
that?
Well, I do need to go take my quick break at some point.
Go ahead.
I'm still learning how to like be able to say, what?
It's not going to ever happen for me.
No, I meant
this
guy.
Well, I need to see this.
Here he is. I don't know who I am. I mean, I am a comic, been doing it many, many, many years, almost 20 years now. And the entire time that I did my comedy, I am, as I came out on stage out of the closet years ago and admitted that I'm a Christian.
Yeah.
I admitted it to the whole world. And yet, even when I started in comedy many, many years ago, I was always a Christian, but I was in comedy clubs, and so I never used any curse words. I've always been curse-free, never used any gratuitous sexual references, because I've always felt that creativity is funnier than crude, and I always wanted to...
Pause it one second. What is his accent? Where's this dude from?
Well, yeah, that's a good point. I
sounds
can
almost like,
up.
Like hints of British in there.
That sounds like Georgia.
He's from Indiana. Yeah,
that is an odd accent.
You want some more? Or is that?
Oh yeah. Are you okay. kidding? We'll do the rest of the show watching this dude.
I knew you'd like this.
Words that could create laughter. That's the way I've always been. And as a Christian, it was just not something I was allowed to do. You know, Christians grow up. We're not supposed to curse, and that's good. That's good that you watch your mouth. But the problem is, it slips out now and again. Because you're human. Human. And sometimes we don't even give ourselves that much. See, that's the point I'm trying to make. I wish we were more real to people that don't believe like us. Maybe they'd actually find us interesting and compelling because we're real with them. Because the truth of the matter
is way more,
it's not fair that we don't have curse words.
Yeah, that's not normally his message, is we should be nicer to people that don't believe like us.
Christians should have their own curse.
All right, well, this is good. It's good stuff.
I don't care how.
All right, it's getting a little boring now. He grew up in California. That explains it. It's sort of like, there's so many different like cross currents of accents, it seems like, in California, right? Like sometimes he can be sort of southerny and.
Right. Yeah, he's a big he's a target of a Vic Berger and the Go Off Kings quite regularly.
Oh, I gotta get into. I can't even believe I missed that whole thing. It's just the strangest thing in the world where you hear like, well, it's not the strangest thing in the world, but to have a comedian come on and say like, my hero was blankety blank, and me just going like, never heard those two words put together. Never heard those. never heard that name before. Had no idea. Had no idea. Without it being like prefaced, like really, you know, obscure comedian named blankety blank, but apparently he's a big comedian. Let's
I do have one that might be more interesting to you.
Let's do it. But let me just say this, we're not going to take calls today because we only got about 35 minutes left anyways, so just take IMs and I'll read a couple as you queue that up. Chardonnay Socialist: Judy Gold is a national treasure, a national fucking treasure. Solvay: this Trump segment is the first time I've cried laughing in longer than I can remember. Jerma Clear: two votes for Ted Cruz on next, please. Thread Baron: where the hell was Judy and James dynamic the past 4 years? This must continue so Don can comment on Biden's presidency in the country. We need the Don and Judy Friday news roundup. A lot of people are saying this very strongly. The post of the left: I feel like it's not like a good look to be using fat as an insult. Trump is bad. There are many other ways to insult him. That may be the first time you've heard Judy's segment on this program. Cuddly Cudlow: what do you think of the plan to get Donald Trump as president again? Trump runs for Congress from Florida with the Republicans gaining a majority in the House. Trump becomes Speaker of the House and files impeachment articles for Biden and Harris. Republicans regain the majority in the Senate, and Ted Cruz, the only senator who's not a rhino, becomes the majority leader and leads the Senate to convict Biden and Harris. Trump is then third in line to become president. This is genuinely the discussion happening on right-wing forums. I say go for it. Definitely go for it. All right, let me see this more of this this Brad Steiner.
So this looks like more of his normal pace, which is offended by Christmas. So
virtue in the nation at one point. Even the founders said that we should.
Whoa, wait a second. The guy's gotten a very different look.
Yeah. That was the old clip that I was playing earlier from like the Bush era, I think.
But see, that's my point. We had this idea of virtue in the nation at one point. Even the founders said that we should teach the Bible in school because they wanted us not to be theocracy, but a place where we know where morals came from. They have to come from a transcendent source so that humans can't change it. That's how it has to work in a republic where you loan your liberties to your representatives.
Pause it for 1 second. I just tell you folks, I mean, this is going to come as a shock, but I don't know what Bible he's looking at, but that was written by man. It's just, you just didn't meet the people who decided what your values were going to be. It's not actually transcendent.
His delivery is insanely creepy.
Right, let's do a little more of this, and we're going to see what's going on here.
He's just like, I've never heard of such things. We've taught that everything we want is ours. No, son.
As long as you're in your little bubble, it'll work that way. When you get in the real world, we're going to destroy you. No, man. I just say that because I miss God. I miss God in our country. He used to be such part of the fabric. I miss Merry Christmas. See, you were young, your kid. I realize you guys never grew up with Merry Christmas. When I grew up, everybody said, Merry Christmas! Merry Christmas to you, Mr. Lowenstein! No Jews in Utah, Ms. Armstrong? Because it wasn't about religion, it was about something we could celebrate together because it was a beautiful thing. But what do people say now? Happy Holidays. I just say Happy Holidays because I don't always say Christmas because you don't believe in Christmas.
Oh, God. All right. That's good. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
That is, wow.
Even the Jews comported. Even the Jews.
Was that the last name that he cited that was like a Jewish last name?
Yeah, it was a Jewish joke. The Lowenstein thing.
Lowenstein. And, oh, cool. And then he did a rat boy. Noise. Yeah.
That, you know, that
segment. It's a reason you haven't heard of him.
That segment got me madder than I thought it would. I thought I was going to enjoy that. And I just actually you got to be effing kidding me.
Yeah.
I mean, if you honestly, that is that dynamic. And I'm not equating this, but in terms of the dynamic, to understand the concept of privilege for a Jewish person, like that is very instructive. Because from his perspective, Christmas is not a religious holiday. It's just normal. It's just the way normal things are.
How God intended it.
It's just yeah. I mean, obviously these values come from a transcendent being, but from his perspective, it's just like absurd the idea that Mr. Lowenstein would not be celebrating Christmas because it's not religious. It's just, I mean, but of course Christmas is a religious holiday. I understand that it is like also the way to sell cars and this and that.
I mean, the same crowd is saying Christ out of like, don't take Christ out of Christmas. And then at the same time, they're trying to like make it a pagan holiday.
It's not about their hypocrisy. It's about when you are on top. Whatever the hierarchy is in society, wherever it is, when you are on top, there are people who make the mistake of assuming because they're on top of the hierarchy that their values are normative, that their perspective that it's abnormal to not celebrate Christmas because there's no reason not to. And they don't realize that they're functioning in such a way because of their specific values, which aren't necessarily shared by other people. And this is not have the same implications, although maybe some a little bit, but you know, this is definitionally about like white supremacy. It's like where certain values that you assume are just simply the way things are. And that, you just assume that's the way they are, as opposed to them being sort of a series of choices. I mean, it's also the same with, the patriarchy. I mean, any system of hierarchy, the idea that it's become, I mean, and to a certain extent, you also get it in the context of class, where it's just like the idea, I don't know. I just remember there was a debate up in New Hampshire. I can't remember which cycle it was, maybe 2008. And somebody asked a question of, I can't even remember what the context was, but it was about like a presumption of like what teachers were getting for pay or something. I can't remember. I remember a story of a friend of mine who worked on a show, and a host had said, was asking about where the kids went to school and just assumed they went to like this, you know, wealthy private school in Brooklyn. And the person was just like, how, like, what, like they're completely oblivious to, like the, it's just a matter of, that's what privilege is, right? When you just, the genuine privilege is to just assume that everybody else has the same, that you're all on a level playing field in some way. And that whatever you have has been achieved by my efforts, not by certain sets of values that are imposed upon others that may in some way inhibit them.
That's kind of the argument against Medicare for All to some degree, or what the argument that was being made by, you know, centrist liberals in the debate. You just don't know what it's like sometimes if you don't have, or if you do have.
Yeah. Where it's, I mean, I think like the idea that like, you know, I'm not tied to my job. Why would that, you know, because of my healthcare or, you know, the, or it's, you know, it's an expense, but it's not that big of an expense. I mean, or the idea of not having healthcare. Yes. I mean, I think I have a feeling that one, I mean, I think there's a certain amount of out of touch when it comes to those people with Medicare and for all, but I also imagine it's also sort of like, they're surrounded by lobbyists who are telling them, for obscuring what the problem is, as opposed to this guy who's just like, I grew up in a Christian. We all just said Merry Christmas. When I was a kid, it seemed like everybody around me said Merry Christmas. Well, yeah, dude, you're a kid. I mean, that definitionally means that you're exposed to a smaller amount of people because your parents aren't letting you go, just wander off and bump into random strangers. Your parents are basically, you're in a cocoon. Wow. I didn't anticipate that when you said you want me to play some more of that guy.
He's got a new show called Brad Stein Has Issues. Like, I mean, it's all just right wing comedy now. It's like the religious stuff is really. It was interesting to hear James come at it because, yeah, that's all I know him as is just a right wing hack.
This is pretty funny. Let's watch this. There's a this and is she the one who beat Max Rose? This congresswoman. Yes. Okay, so her name is Nicole Malliotakis. Thank you.
It's a tough one.
And she beat Max Rose in Staten Island. And here she is explaining to Erin Burnett why she didn't certify the election, because somehow in Staten Island, she got wind of all these shenanigans taking place in other states.
Yeah. And shockingly, there are Trump supporters on Staten Island.
Well, that's not shocking on Staten Island, but go ahead.
Yes, I'm joking.
Can't hear it.
Yep, no sound.
Brendan has a sound issue today.
Oh, yeah, man. Matt, you might have to play it because this is just...
Okay, give me one.
Let me take some IMs and then I'll set that up when you have it, Matt. Gambling is a sin. Emma, do you know that you have a perfect 5-star rating on WikiFeet?
Jesus Christ. This is my, like, I...
What is that from?
I'm sure I was wearing, like, heels at some event.
Oh,
and they
God,
got
that's ridiculous. Cheeto, please ask the president about the new Ghostbusters monster. What does he think about him? Zopunny, sorry, should say died of, what? Zopunny, I'm sorry. Whatever you wrote before that did not show up. Maddie Moron, very pleased to learn that James is from our neck of the woods. Love the vid he did for the bug main. Demian, okay, Brendan's going to rejoin. Did anyone ever figure out why Donald Trump stands like he's in the front half of a centaur? James Austin Johnson does a pretty killer Biden, too. Brad Stein really trying to deliver like Carlin. It's terrible. Sam's hanging Chad. Is it just me or is there some obvious chemistry between Sam and Digby? Sam and Digby, K-I-S-S-I-N-G. Go for it, Sam. Digby lives across the country and is married. So, yeah. Hadub, we've seen hundreds of hours of Brad Stein on the Go Off Kings at this point, and I'm pretty sure his comedy has been the same for 30 years, like the exact same material. Bottom structure. As someone who grew up going to church for 10 plus hours a week, and isn't a practitioner of any religion, there are times when I wonder if I should go find a radical Christian church to network and develop counter movement to the right wing evangelicals who are dominating the space and controlling the narrative from Christian groups. I mean, there's been attempts at this, at least, you know, as long as I've been at doing this. I mean, we had a guy, gosh, I can't remember his name now, who had a show on Air America, the weekend show. Attempting to sort of, and I just think that this I think that what has happened, and I think to a certain extent, James sort of expressed it, is that as religion, broadly speaking, loses its allure to people, just because I think progress does that. I mean, and there becomes more things to people become more emancipated. There becomes more things that people can guide in their lives, and you know, religion's losing adherence. It is morphing in some way to sort of be like to attach to broader identities. And it becomes more of a signifier that you hold a set of beliefs that are not narrowly tailored to theology, but also extend to, like, you know, social stuff.
I mean, this is sort of the creation of whiteness out of Christianity in American history, just on another version of it, right? Like, it was, we're all Christians, and then slowly it became like, oh, we're all white, and because the Christianity parts seemed less important.
What, do you have that clip, Matt?
I do, yep.
Okay, all right, so this clip here, all right, let me just set this up. This is Nicole Malliotakis. She is from Staten Island, New York. For those people who don't know, Staten Island is the only right-wing borough of New York, and on top of which, it is not in Pennsylvania or in Wisconsin or in Georgia or in Nevada, where supposedly the election was stolen. So I'm not sure how she knows about this, but maybe she has some inside scoop. Let's listen to her. She's on Aaron Burnett.
I'm just wondering, do you, when you look back and are honest with yourself, do you feel that you sort of bought into a narrative here that we all know is completely false? I mean, the president's out there saying 5,000 dead people voted in Georgia. 2 dead people voted in Georgia. But it was rhetoric like that that got people like you on board. Do you feel you were duped?
Well, I think that there is an issue that there are tens of millions of Americans who are concerned about whether there are safeguards in our election.
But they're concerned
process.
Because of lies and like that. But they're concerned because of lies like that. That is a lie. They heard that. If I heard that and believed it, I might be concerned too. But it's not true.
And that's why we have to have that is why we should be having a hearing into the process to see what safeguards are needed. Where were these prior convictions that took place in various states? How do we make the system better? How do we restore the faith of the American people that when they go to vote, their vote does count and it matters? That is what this is all about. And if we can have a public hearing about it, and a discussion and a debate on the House floor, instead of attacking people personally, yeah,
again,
I think we would actually get
again,
somewhere.
Again, I just want to make sure that you are clear. There was no widespread fraud. There is no question about what happened in this election. And that is very different than saying we want to make sure that every vote counts that should count and every vote that shouldn't. Those are two very different things to talk about.
Absolutely. Well, absolutely. And I've never said anything about widespread fraud. I've said that there have been certain irregularities that need to be looked at closer and that the American people deserve to know if that took place in this election. And it appears that it did in certain states. And that is all we're asking for. And I think that's very fair. And that would just ease the minds of tens of millions of Americans who feel that the election wasn't fair. So let's just I think that that's something worthwhile to be looking at.
Just one final point on this. Those tens of millions of Americans think that it wasn't fair because Donald Trump told them that. And that voice of Donald Trump was amplified by other people in power. Okay? Because the reason they believe it wasn't fair is because someone told them it wasn't fair. And it was fair.
Maybe they should have a hearing on why people like Nicole Malliotakis said there was that the election needs to be investigated.
Yeah, I mean, like, again, she's like a broken record. She has no other way to turn, nowhere to turn, because Aaron Burnett is just saying there was no fraud. Well, we need to have hearings to determine. Why do you need to have hearings if there's no evidence?
We need
of
to have
fraud?
Hearings because I've been saying that there's fraud, and we need to show that there is no fraud. In other words, they're basically saying, like, we need to show the American public so they have some sense of, like, assuredness that we don't know what we're talking about.
No, they, I mean, it's so clear why they want to have hearings on this. And fortunately, because the Democrats hold both chambers, that's not going to happen.
Right.
Like, they need to cover their own ass. And the whole issue here is that they look like clowns. I mean, she has to go back to her constituents and she'll be up for re-election in 2 years, less than that.
She'll do fine. And, she'll do fine. In Staten Island, she's going to do fine.
Well, I mean, they did have Max Rose at one point, and Max Rose lost his election by running against AOC and defund the police.
I know it. I know it. You can't play into those right-wing narratives. And
he won. He won, by the way, the first time around by running on the corruption of his Republican opponent and how much money he took from big money interests, then turned it around saying, I love our cops, and then lost to that clown that was just interviewed by Burnett right there.
You made a good point about what would have happened if the Democrats had lost, let's say, John Ossoff's race. Right now, we would be knee deep in Senate hearings about the election, on how Joe Biden stole the election. I mean, no doubt about it.
We 100%.
They would have started those hearings in the Republican
Hunter Biden hearings.
Yes.
Hunter Biden's laptop.
Hunter Biden laptop had all of the software from Smartmatic that changed the election from Dominion, and through, you know, the server was accessed through a point through Hunter Biden's computer that was left at a shop and in Germany. And I mean, that would be everything that would be going on right now.
I mean, that's honestly one of the underrated benefits of the Democrats controlling both chambers, is because we don't have to be sidetracked by that nonsense. And it's more than just being sidetracked. It's like a hijacking of the conversation for specific people's political ends.
With that said, Emma, there are people who are still trying. Let's play this clip from Sean Hannity last night. It's not over, folks. It is not over. This is clip number 9.
The clown school. So I'm not that Brian's better at the legal stuff, but the it looked
well, pause
like
it. I should tell you that this guy in the beret is the
is it a beret computer, or is it some sort of like I think Scottish is it, garb?
I can't quite tell. I don't,
a beret
can't tell
is if, too ethnic, Sam. Please.
Well, I can't tell if that's like some type of like a Scottish military cap or something or what. But he is the John Paul MacIsaac. He's the computer repair shop owner who got the Hunter Biden computer.
The clown school. So I'm not that Brian's better at the legal stuff, but the it looked like this would be something that you would want to have a conversation with to another foreign leader about, because this was a lot of money that was exchanging hands, like a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. And you, sir, you still have a copy of the hard drive. Is that correct?
Correct.
Would you be willing to share it with me? I would love to.
I'd have to talk to my attorney about that.
You'll take it under consideration?
Yeah, I have a very good attorney, and he's there to protect me for myself.
Listen, sir,
that was so
first off, I'm
horrible.
Sort of shocked. This is the first time that question has come up. Hey, can we see that the hard drive that we were trying to build an entire narrative about for 3 months? Can I see that?
Also, pretty sure it's pretty fucking illegal for the computer repair guy to take a copy of his customer's hard drive.
I was gonna say, like, I don't think I would go to that computer hardware shop after that. I'm a little bit nervous about my computer now.
You mean you wouldn't take it to him in the first place, given that's how he dresses as a computer repairman?
I'm not gonna judge my computer repairman because he's wearing a funny hat. But if he says, like, hey, I just want you to know, I just need you to sign that that form that says it's okay for me to take your banking passwords off your computer, incidentally, just FYI. I mean, presumably,
that should destroy his business. Like, he has no qualms clearly about, like, I'm going to make a very obscure reference that you might laugh at. You're definitely going to laugh at. Like, I was like, this girl on The Bachelor, I'm following this gossip about it. She's like crazy. And she went to a confidence coach who then like told the public what she said to the confidence coach. And I'm just like, girl, like, why would you do this? You're destroying your own business. You're a confidence coach and you're revealing private information about your client to the public.
Information about my client to the public when there would be interest about it.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Very trustworthy.
Similar
consequences, right?
Ladies and gentlemen, people ask why we play clips like this, the one that we're about to play. And I will make it clear, like, people make mistakes. In fact, maybe we'll play both of them. But when we come on, you can disagree with like our politics. You can disagree. You can find, me smug, or that I have too many ahs and ums, or my cadence is too slow, or, Emma's feet are weird, or whatever it is. But
my feet are beautiful. I have a 5-star rating on WikiFeet. What are you talking about?
But the fact is that like when we at least make an effort, sometimes we mess up, but we make a significant effort to make sure that like if we tell you something, that we've at least spent a little bit of time researching it and assessing.
I meant to say this. I messed up the number of bills that you could get through reconciliation in a year on the show yesterday. Wanted to say that. Now, okay. Perfect opportunity for me to correct it, even though I stepped on your setup.
Reconciliation is obscure, and it really is just a function of how many, you get one fiscal year, but it's weird because over the next 2 years, Joe Biden will have three, just because of the nature of the fiscal years.
Yes, I said one, and then because of the fiscal years, it should have been three.
Right. And
no, actually, I got it right. Never mind. Go on.
But the point is that you're concerned about it.
Right. Okay.
Here is Tim Pool, who apparently, I can't remember now, because every week it seems to change. He's not talking about politics. He's going to talk about skateboarding because he was so wrong in his assessment of what was going to. He thought there was going to be a 48-state sweep for Donald Trump. Here's Tim Pool. He and his crew did a 25-minute segment, like a year on a roll, talking about the latest Jacobin cover without a single one of them realizing that the cover was satirical. Do we have an image of the cover first? Just to get a sense. Here's the cover and zoom in on it so people can see. It appears to be.
I can't zoom, unfortunately.
St. Joe Biden kneeling Nancy Pelosi right there.
Yes. I can't, I can't quite see
her Kente cloth.
We've got
moment.
Hillary, Obama, Bill up above a Biden with a halo. A lot of people with halos up here. Nancy, okay.
Now
a drone.
Now these figures that you've just and Hillary, Bill Clinton, Nancy Pelosi, Jacobin is generally, and who's that in the middle there? Is that
this is people reading White Fragility. This is Joe Biden.
Okay, now these are all figures who, if you know even the slightest bit about Jacobin magazine, you would know. Are almost the primary sources of ridicule and critique by Jacobin. They are a socialist magazine that critiques liberals, as much as, well, not as much as conservatives in a different way, but I'm quite convinced you could go to Wikipedia and find that. Maybe not. You'd have to actually.
That's asking a little bit.
You'd have to say, like, what is Jacobin? Why are they looking at Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton as like deities and or like saints worshiping a Joe Biden who is Jesus-like? That would be the first question I would ask, regardless if I had any information or not, if I was going to spend even like a minute to bring it up. But not Tim Pool and crew. Let's play part of this.
And we'll talk about Joe Biden being president and this glorious image from Jacobin magazine. Now, I'll tell you what I find particularly fascinating about this is Jacobin is like socialist. Like they're DSA, many are, there's like communism. They get their name from the French Revolution, and they've put a cover out, and it's Joe Biden as Jesus with the sun behind his head, literally imagery of Jesus. And there are people below him, like looking up and cheering and worshiping him. Huh. And there's angels filming and interviewing him. What are these people thinking?
Stop with this obsession with putting people above yourself and putting all the responsibilities and all your failures and all your hopes into one person and take some gosh darn personal responsibility for yourself.
But when you have a media ecosystem that is acting like Joe Biden is literally Jesus, then I don't see how we actually solve problems. Just to clarify my point, Joe Biden could do really horrible things and they don't care. But it's funny because they say the same thing about, you know, the Donald drones Trump. Are in this is people photo. Worshiping Jesus Biden, who hasn't done anything. No. What did he do?
He's defeated the devil.
Up against the wall.
Yeah, he defeated the devil. There you go. The evil Trump. Yeah.
Who are these guys?
Oh my gosh! How
was there a clip of them like figuring it out, or did they just end the segment and they're hoping no one saw it?
What's amazing is nobody, not one of those four guys in there goes like, hey, or the producer goes like, hey, is it possible that they're making the point that we're actually like criticizing them for that? Like some people are looking upon these guys as if they're deities. And
yeah, Tim is like, well, I mean, these guys are supposed to be socialists and communists.
He was so close.
So close, Tim.
Yeah, but they really have bought into the narrative that he is a puppet of the socialist left, like that's or the communist
that,
left.
That,
or
that must be
say.
What it is.
I mean, that's what they think. They're like, no. Like Trump was right. Like he is a puppet for Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez or Sandy Cortez. And yeah, that must be why the socialist communist magazine is uplifting him.
I am starting to believe Tim Pool's claim that he can't get the internet in his bunker, because maybe they just haven't been following like what has been going on for a long time. I mean, it's just
the serious point about it is that like their ecosystem is so insular that they can't understand.
Exactly.
I mean, really, that seemed like something ripped from like when Tim Heidecker comes on this show.
Yes. Honestly, I wonder if Heidecker wrote that for them. Is that possible?
Tim makes a lot of money. Tim Pool.
All right. Since we just knocked Tim Pool for doing this, did you pull that other one? Let's just do it. I know, like, it's not about, this is just another example of another person who, like, apparently just doesn't think that, like, it's relevant to do any research whatsoever when you're going to make a point, if it somehow dovetails into your point. Do we have that from the Slack? The Jimmy clip?
Oh.
Guys, do we have this?
Yes. I thought we were going in a different direction.
Okay.
We're going to
do this.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, this is, I didn't know which one you were talking about, but this, I found this stunning. Jimmy Dore plays this clip, and I don't know if they were pretending or not. Like I can't quite tell, but this is, and sometimes we play clips and we're not sure where they came from, like who the credit it to, but this is just sort of, I mean, and I present this to folks again, because it's like, look, I don't know if Jimmy Dore has any different politics than I do, to the extent that I don't even know that he has any real politics other than like he's mad at, authority. That seems to drive everything.
No, I'm sorry, Sam, you're not giving him enough credit. He's mad at Democrats.
Well, yeah, I mean, but apparently it's a little bit broader than that, because here he is playing a clip of a speech from the Boogaloo Boys. And I don't think that you should not play a clip from the Boogaloo Boys. And I don't think that there's something that you couldn't look at this and go, this is interesting. But to not know anything about the Boogaloo Boys and just and not understand what the guy's even saying here, because you don't know who the Boogaloo Boys are, is stunning to me. And it's extremely dangerous for young people, for smart, for people who are, you know, who actually take the time to read things. He doesn't even know. We'll play this clip.
Force for good in the world. When was that? 1940?
Come on, Mac. You know when that was the thing. That time. You know the thing.
So here's a guy. There's a guy who's a man who aligns with Boogaloo Boys. Who are the Boogaloo Boys? What is that? I don't even know what that is. Do you, Ron?
I don't
know. Is that
know
like that. The Proud Boys?
I only do a news show.
Steph, look up Boogaloo Boys.
I'll look up Boogaloo. My guess is they're Proud Boys who like to dance.
I think they're probably Proud Boys with rhythm.
Okay.
We'll stop at the joke.
So this guy went to the state capitol in Michigan, and he gave this speech. Now, Ron, I want you to listen to this speech and tell me how much of this you agree with.
Pause it for 1 second.
Because we're told
the Boogaloo Boys... There's basically two strains of Boogaloo Boys. One strain is a virulent white supremacist. And over the years, some of the white supremacy has supposedly been submerged into another version of white supremacy called extreme libertarianism. And the extreme libertarians, they don't want society. And some of these Boogaloo Boys have, over the course of the summer, participated in some BLM and Antifa protests because they are for the smashing of the government and to do so in a violent way. Some of them think these protests are healthy because it could bring about a civil war. And now I want you to just keep that in your mind. They are heavily armed. They are part of often part of like militias. Understand, when you talk about a civil war, think about for a moment where the lines might break down if there's a civil war, or if the government goes away and you've got these guys with all these weapons. Play this clip.
Gave this speech. Now, Ron, I want you to listen to this speech and tell me how much of this you agree with. Because we're told these people are maniacs.
Yes, they're loosely organized, far-right, anti-government, and extremist political movement in the United States, according to Wiki.
Okay. Oh, Wikipedia. Okay, good.
Oh, good. I'm glad they did some research.
BLM, Antifa, Boogaloo, and right-wing militias, they are the antibodies, not the disease that is destroying our country.
He included Antifa in that.
Yeah, I think he said BLM, Antifa, and then he also said Boogaloo and yeah. Proud Boys.
Yeah.
Pause it for 1 second. Again. He also said right-wing militias. I mean, the idea that they're going through this on air and trying to figure out, like, you know, maybe these guys are our friends. They're not examining the Boogaloo Boys here. And the funny part is that the dude in the, I think that's his, like, his sidekick, starts to realize, like, hey, wait a second, maybe this is sort of irresponsible that we're not actually educating people as to who these people are. But go back, keep playing.
BLM, Antifa, Boogaloo, and right-wing militias.
Yes, he says BLM, Antifa, Boogaloo, and right-wing militias are not the problem. That's what he's saying. Let's listen to it again.
BLM, Antifa, Boogaloo, and right-wing militias, they are the antibodies, not the disease that is destroying our country.
They are the antibodies, he says, not the disease destroying our country.
The disease is a country run by two corrupt political parties that do not care about you. So deeply incestuous with corporations that they are indistinguishable from each other. A government that spent 6 months debating whether to give their own people $600, but only 24 hours to unanimously agree to give billions of dollars to foreign tyrannical governments and corporations. A government that has bombed villages overseas my entire life for my supposed safety here. This is a call for unity. For all of American people that realize the true threat against us to come together. For every mother mourning her children that was killed by police, for every business crushed down by state lockdowns, for every broken soldier sent to fight wars that have no point, This is our last chance to avoid either a tyrannical government or a bloody and pointless civil war among American people who do not have that much against each other and have more in common than they realize.
Can we
and a message to the government.
Positive. I just want to catch people up here. Businesses crushed by an oppressive state.
Right.
During COVID.
That's the key thing. It's not just like making guest appearances at BLM protests. They were anti-lockdown protesters.
That's why they're in the state house in Michigan. And look, yes, they say some things that people would agree with in that moment, but let's carry this through. What is the civil war they're going to be fighting on? These right-wing militias that they're aligned with, who do we think that we're going to be, who are they going to align with? The right-wing militias. Do you think those right-wing militias are going to go like, well, we're going after the corporations now, so Black Lives Matter.
Yeah. Well, I loved watching him realize, this makes a lot of sense to me in real time as the Boogaloo Boys guy was talking.
Well, it's best when, like, that's why he's farming this out to his partner there. And his partner's like, well, you know, I wouldn't, but here, go continue. I mean,
the thing Jimmy's interested in is the both parties are equally corrupt.
Exactly.
Exactly. And here's the danger about that. Perfectly fine to believe that if that's the case. And to some extent, the corruption is there. Obviously, we can already see within a day or two that there are some material benefits to having the corrupt Democratic Party in office as opposed to the corrupt Republican Party in office. But if your solution, if the antibody to this virus of corruption is right-wing militia, guess what, folks? It's going to take over the host body and kill everything that doesn't look like it.
Is civil war. I mean, the casual nature with which you throw that out, you know, we care a ton about giving people health care. Medicare for all is the number one priority of Jimmy and his ilk. But yeah, we're totally cool with a civil war that presumably might hurt some people.
Tim McVeigh also had a real problem with the government, too. Continue.
More in common than they realize. And a message to the government. We come in peace. We do not intend to commit violence. But I am pleading with you, with tears in my eyes and cracks in my voice. If you continue to oppress the American people, they will remain rational no longer. Thank you.
What do you mean by that?
Those guys look really rational.
So what's happening there is a right-wing militia guy reaching out to the left-wing people in BLM and Antifa saying we have more in common than our government wants us to think. Did you hear what he said? He said they can't give us $600. They could barely come up with $600 in a whole year, but they can come up with billions and trillions of dollars for international corporations and corrupt governments, foreign governments. We want to bring our soldiers home. Did he say anything there that you could disagree with, Ron?
I would say business owners.
I think everything he's saying just paints the picture of what's going on societally. I don't know if this guy's with any particular group or if he's just a guy
with
making
the
a speech.
Boogaloo
Boys,
and he's standing with other guys in military garb and weapons.
He's right on that. It's like this is the system that's oppressing the American people. That is, putting us in.
He's not making any type of systemic critique.
It's an anarchist critique.
Not anarchist.
It's not even anarchist. It is just this state, the government is inhibiting our commerce for the sake of a pandemic. And so we're going to show up with weapons here. Now, here's the other thing. You're taking at face value everything this guy says in this moment, wearing his fatigues, carrying his weapon, with guys on both sides. This is what you do. This is why you read things, why you go and investigate who's saying these things and what might be their motivation to appeal in this moment to other people who are anti-authoritarian, who are railing against not the government per se, but a system of oppression that can really ultimately only be addressed ultimately by a government. And the idea that they would present this as like, could he, you know, the very words he's saying in this moment sound fine. I mean, this is just the height of a irresponsibility or just blatant misinformation. I think it's just sheer laziness on some level.
It's the same leftists, like, you know, when they side with Tucker Carlson because he says anti-war things one night. Like, that's the exact same dynamic.
But even more dangerous because, you know, everybody doesn't, you can watch Tucker Carlson see other things that he does here. But just platforming the Boogaloo Boys and then not just platforming them, but presenting them as if, like, you know, some of the stuff they say is good.
But he also obscures the critique of capitalism, and so do the Boogaloo Boys when they act like it's just the parties in control of all these corporations and not capitalism had created a state that serves it. Right.
Exactly.
That's the fundamental problem with, from a left perspective, what these guys are saying.
These are the I think it's the was it the Hessians or the Strassites who had a problem with capitalism because it brought in wokeism on some level under Hitler. But go ahead.
Back on everyone during a pandemic, and this is the problem.
Oh, pause it for 1 second, too. I want to remind everybody that the Democrats passed at least $2,000 back in the early spring. So when we say our government wouldn't do this, unfortunately, for people during a COVID, the government was not controlled by Democrats who are trying to figure out a way to pass an extra $1,600. May not be as much as you'd want. I would want an extra $2,400 before, obviously. That we reported today, they're talking about another 3,000. Maybe it's insufficient. But when we talk about why the government didn't provide something, it is exactly the way that, like, you know, we criticize mainstream corporate media for obscuring the differences between the parties that are preventing certain things from happening. You want to talk about Medicare for all? Both parties are not providing it. But you want to talk about checks during COVID? There's a reason why we don't have it. It was because of the Republican Party.
A theme where it's like when stuff like this happens, and we've been talking about stuff like this for 4 years, what happens when people are oppressed, when a system is completely broken and has thrown working people over the boat? People turn to demagogues. People, you know, are desperate. People have nowhere to turn. And that's where our society is at. And the system is unbroken. The system continues. And, you know, today, you know, you kind of saw a lot of that just going on today, where you just had these super wealthy elite people patting each other on the back. You know, you had, I mean, even, and I watched a lot of the inauguration, and it was pretty cringe throughout most of it. I mean, Lady Gaga had a pin on that looked like something out of the Hunger Games, which was very poetically appropriate, considering what's going on at the world at large. So.
What?
So, yeah, I mean,
it's all aesthetic. All of this is aesthetic.
Totally
just frustrations of what's really going on in our society.
Whoa. That's remarkable. I think that's really a remarkable piece of video. And of
so
course,
you
people
had
will
his
disparage
buddy
that guy and disparage.
You had his buddy basically try and pull the conversation away because he realized at one point, like, oh, wait a second, we're promoting essentially right wing militias here. And I got news for you, folks. When that civil war comes, those right-wing militia guys, they're not on your side, and they got a lot of guns.
And I think just strategically, the idea that Antifa or BLM would get anything about, like, being seen in the same vicinity as protests with these guys, I think is asking for trouble, because these guys are completely reckless and have guns, and that will, you want the roll-up of Antifa by DHS, have them in, you know, bed with one of these Boogaloo guys who does something extremely reckless, and all of a sudden, you know, you have another Red Scare on your hands.
These are the Bundys. I mean,
yeah,
you know, it's the same sort of ideology here.
Yeah, suburban Bundys.
And the idea that, like, you know, again, it's like it is the height of irresponsibility at best to present these guys like, you should listen to him. It's not inconceivable to me that I don't know what the number is. It's probably just, I feel quite confident that it's greater than zero. Some 15-year-old kid is going to go look up the Boogaloo Boys and go like, that looks cool, man. Carry weapons, get into gear. And we're consistent. We're on the same page. BLM.
Laziness of like the constant, like return to material benefits aren't being provided for people, like as if that really has that much of a connection to that ideology, or just like also
how much you think it costs to buy a weapon like that?
No, I mean, it's just like there's also like it would be wonderful if they would never do it because, you know, the core audience would fall apart. But like, would they ever acknowledge white supremacy, white nationalism, a lot of these emotional driving factors that are beyond the checks cut to people? Like, that is a huge element that should not be tied into this. There isn't a connection there.
And it's not like this is an examination of like, you know, society is unstable at this point because there is immiseration in those people's communities, et cetera, et cetera. But this, you know, if you want to do a thoughtful sort of like examination of the things that drive these guys, but to sit there and just let the guy talk, platform his thing and say like, these guys seem perfectly reasonable to me. That's not the point. You know, like, and that's why his buddy tried to make it like, well, we live in a general era where things are bad and blah, blah, blah. But they'd never actually point out, hey, this is specifically the way not to go. These are people you don't want to get involved with, even though maybe we are all subjected to the same forces that brings us about. I mean, I think it's arguable as to whether that's the case. But even if that's your argument, that's the way to do it. The way he's doing it is he is funneling people into those right wing movements. And that is what is problematic about it.
Yeah, I mean, I have hesitations bringing up the Socialist Rifle Association, even though in principle I agree with what they do. But like, that's because I don't want somebody to get killed. To lead your audience members to join a group that will get them killed for ideas who you are completely not informing them about is, I think, reprehensible.
It really, honestly, I mean, it is like...
He's not informed about it. He saw a video of it and thought, wow, this actually fits kind of my agenda. And so here we go. I mean, like, no one on his staff was informed. They were looking up the wiki about Boogaloo Boys right there on the fly. Like, so you've got to then examine, if you're someone who still enjoys his content, what is his agenda then? Because it's certainly not informing you.
It's really, I mean, it's to take that stuff at face value. It's just, I can't get past it. I really can't. Believe me. I wish. Oh, geez, we got to end it. Sorry, folks. I got carried away there. I mean, I was going to wait to hold that till Monday, but I couldn't believe it. I mean, that was just bottom structure. As someone who grew up going to church for 10-plus hours a week and isn't a practitioner of any religion, there are times when I wonder if I should find a rat. Oh, yeah, you said that already. I wonder what common trait Jimmy Dore shares with Boogaloo Boys where he doesn't feel threatened by their rhetoric or behavior.
Good point.
Akshapez, was the Brandon thing a bit? America Report? This is how the free market works. When people learn this computer repairman shares the content off his customers' hard drives with Fox hosts, they will choose an alternative service provider. Yeah, I don't think so. I imagine that his business is probably through the roof from right wingers. Rotin in the Pig. Sounds like a George Carlin impression. Indeed, Ryan Cole. Jimmy Dore is a right-wing opportunist paid to neutralize the left by making it fight itself and not Jimmy's corporatist right paymasters. I don't know about that, but I just know that what he's doing is reprehensible. Crispy, saw today that even David Brooks was talking about nuking the filibuster. Yes, we mentioned that with Digby. I think the idea that that Biden centrist Dems could not be pressured to the left was wrong. Well, we'll see. Godcat, can Marin help us with a majority report LA Bureau Michael Brooks Institute on Elephant Hill, El Sereno? I don't know what that means. Congressional baseball fan, the fact that it started snowing on Wednesday and then immediately stopped right before Klobuchar started speaking saved us from another round of the "and he called me snow woman" joke. Josh Thank from God. Chicago. Am I the only one who found the praise for George W. Bush on Wednesday by libs to be disgusting? Many posts on my timeline were praising Bush for show. Oh, my God. Yeah, horrible.
You follow the wrong people.
Horrible. I did not see any of that, but it's horrible the way that he's been reformed. King Blunted, does this give a guy get Bible lessons in alleyways behind elementary schools? Oh, that's the all right. Let me go down here. I'm going to do five more. PCT Joe, also in the Tim Pool clip, there's a moment where the guy says it's immortal to make a god of Biden while standing in front of artwork of Biden as a child eating monster. Over Tim's head, Saint AOC. Bear at home too. You, Sam, you say stunning a lot. I don't think that means what you think it means. No, it can. I know what stunning means. Doesn't necessarily have positive connotations. You can be stunned by something that you find positive or stunned by something you find negative. Right? Maybe I should look that up. What does stunning mean? I'm going to promote the word use of the word stunning. I haven't looked it up. As if it was like I'm promoting right-wing militia. All right. Two more. MSNB Cedar. Child direct payments or tax credit plan is an embrace of recognition of Matty Glace's billions of Americans plan, significantly increase the immigration pathway to citizenship, promote economic support for children and families who want to have them. I'm not sure. I haven't looked on his plan that closely. And the final IM of the week. Oh, gosh. Got to figure out a better way of doing this. AlexJS485, haha, of course Jimmy Dore would be more than happy to completely absorb the fascist propaganda messaging of the Boogaloo Boys. Could there be anyone more of a mark for that kind of rhetoric? Seriously, perfect fascist messaging. This political process doesn't work. We must all come together and neutralize all politics and let the people like me dictate. And I would just put an asterisk, you know, me, the ones with the semi-automatic weapons. All right, folks. Matt, Brendan, Emma, Jamie, great job this week. See you guys on Monday.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm going to get
there. I can't get over that.
I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. Finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. I guess I'm where the choice is made, for the option where you don't get paid.